And welcome to In-Game Chat for Thursday, September 2nd, 2010. It's the Daughterboard episode. I am Scott.
I'm James.
Jeremy.
I'm RJ.
That's it. No Dennis, no Matt tonight. But we do have a little bit of Matt. He did email us in the tweets and emails.
Poor fucker, I'm sorry, dude.
And we left him a voicemail this time. We went to the emails first. We had talk on some of the conversations that we had in previous episodes, the Casablanca video games and methods on changing the industry and how we work as a collective or not work as a collective. Alan Wake, perceptions of gamers. More thoughts on Bioshock Infinite that comes from Ravenlock. Vanquish demo, RJ gives us his thoughts on that. Metroid Other M, none of us have played it yet, but by next episode, Jeremy will have. PC building, our first time. Hopefully will be by the time you hear this next episode, I will have one. Price increase on Xbox Live, we covered that as well, but it's covered exactly the way we would have through Iron Past, who wrote in about that. Dead Rising 2, Case Zero, that comes from Matt. So you'll enjoy that. The biggest impact a game had on our lives, thanks for that wonderful question. Peter Molyneux is brought up. Also, the Back to the Future game from Telltale is brought up. How could we not? You expected that from us in
Nobody
the thread.
Nobody expected us to talk about Back to the Future. It's completely
unexpected. See, the big surprise is actually going to be what we didn't do. Because we could have just gone on. The whole third hour of the show could have just been us riffing on the fucking movie. You know? But instead I make Scott shed a single tragic tear.
The return of Duke Nukem, Gibbs, and of course Kevin's Corner, all in this episode of In-Game Chat. So if you'd like to be a part of this episode, in the episode, all you have to do is email us, everyone at ingamechat.net. You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat. Also, you can call us. It's Kevin's Corner, but the voicemail is all open to you guys. 201-7-IN-GAME is the number, 201-7-IN-GAME. And don't forget to stop by colonyofgamers.com and check out our forums over there. You can interact there as well. So there you go. Enjoy the show.
Sold out everywhere else.
What are you talking about?
Someone's mentioning something about that PS3 mod chip thing.
Oh man, that's just all blown open. It's done. You can't stop it anymore. Piss is in the swimming pool at this point.
Yeah, once it's
like done, once the code went open, like and like all you needed was like the most basic MacGyver components in order to get it done. It don't matter. They can sit there and chew on it down under all they want to, like in the legal system. It's going to stop shit. I mean, I haven't really been following it or anything. That's Jeremy's job. It's your stomping ground, I guess. Your bailiwick, your wheelhouse.
My old stomping grounds.
Whatever. And then you still know what you know. I didn't say you were going to do it, but you're the only one with the real grounding in it. I mean, I've torn open my share of PS1s and PS2s and soldered shit onto the main board. I've grounded out and fucking discharged my whole PSU before. And
into your hand.
Yeah. But it's been a while.
I know I said I was going to do up my 360, but every time I think about it, I'm like, man.
Yeah, it's made it too hard. It's not even fun.
Increasingly looking like I'm not going to do it, so.
Mm-hmm.
5% of Steam users running a Mac. Target and Best Buy both entering the used game market.
It's an odd time to try to get into that business.
Yeah, really.
Or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe they don't plan to. Maybe they're not planning on doing it. You know, I don't know.
I don't know the details of theirs.
They might not want to get heavy into it, which would mean it wouldn't cost as much for them, I guess, if they're not going to invest that much of their infrastructure. In which case, I don't know, why not? But seems like it's... I mean, we ain't there yet. I'm going to be there for a minute, but... I suppose they might as well. I mean, they don't really have a mechanism for moving on to the next thing. It's not like they can really... I mean, I guess they could get a jump on digital delivery, but it's... It seems like it'd be a lot easier if you're that kind of store to just muck around in the used shit a little bit. I don't imagine it changing much of anything.
I doubt it. It's... I don't know. It's still tough for me to go buy a used game, even in GameStop, when the newer one is right there and it's only like a $5, $6, $7 difference.
Sometimes. If it's a new release, it's $5 difference. That's about it. And then whatever their fucking incentive system is anymore, I don't know.
The older games even less than that, like $2.
Well, there's your problem, man. There's like. The time and price don't scale out very well to each other, given a long enough period of time. I mean, they're always related. You know, the price of the used game is always going to be related somewhat to the price of the new game. Mm-hmm. But the price of the used game scales out a lot better over time. So that after 24 months, you're able to buy, I don't know, something like moderately charming, like a really, really great but somewhat underrated game for $12. You know, and while the new version, you know, like a brand new copy of that same game, is still $40 or $45. Mm-hmm. So I mean, maybe it would have dropped down to like $20 or $25, but even then, like your savings increase over time. But for new releases, nah, that's not enough savings ever, really. Whatever. I mean, it hasn't changed. A couple more guys like playing along. It's not going to change anything. Not really. I think it's likely that for as long as used games are until they're circumvented somehow by publishers, I guess. I mean, until that battle runs its course, I think that everybody's going to maintain their relative position in terms of used game sales. GameStop and then everybody else. Who knows? You doing your thing over there?
Yeah.
I mean, are you like looking into it and everything?
Yeah, I thought we'd start with the emails first this time.
Start with the emails?
Yeah.
Okay, do we have tweets?
We do.
Okay, what do you want to do, something different?
Different, yeah.
Okay.
I feel like we're doing the same old thing all the time.
Well, this will no doubt put us in a better mind of... I don't want to confuse our listeners, though.
No, we'll start with the emails first. first one comes from...
Don't read that one from Matt.
Okay. I'm going to read
you can read the one from Matt.
Yeah, of course I was going to read the one from Matt. No, this is from Mitchell.
Mitchell!
Keep your eye on the sandwich.
Mitchell! Mitchell's on the corner.
What was it? Heart pounding? Vein clogging?
Mitchell! Mitchell! Not the baby oil!
those guys are going to be over at DragonCon this weekend.
Are they really?
Which is where Matt's at.
Oh, is that where he's going?
We need to tell Matt to...
What a pecker.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Fellas, the Motion Strollers episode is the reason I'm hooked on your podcast. The discussion in the first hour about games that will last, the Casablanca of games, really got me thinking. Right off the top of my head, I agree that Half-Life will be remembered, but not as the greatest of its time. Maybe as the typical great game of its time, great shooting, weapons, movement, story, enemies, pacing, and one glaring tragic flaw, the Zen level.
It was really bad. Yeah. You never did, did you?
Never got
you
there.
You never did.
No.
I think you should. You deserve it. You deserve to play the Zen level.
The Zen level. That keeps it from being the greatest game. So many other games from the period are like that, really terrific, except for one thing. I can answer dude's question about what game I'll be playing in 30 years, Thief. Tell you why, too. The first level, the first game, is called Lord Baffert's Manor. You break into a castle, loot its contents, and work your way up to a throne room to steal a scepter. On levels higher than normal, you have to get out, too. I played this level, this very basic, almost ridiculously simple level, more than 100 times. It is endlessly fascinating to me. You can play it so many ways. If you want to play it fast, it can be finished in less than a minute. If you want all the loot, you can do that. If you want both, my record is 7.5 minutes. You can try to ghost it. You can kill everyone. You can use multiple routes. You can play without equipment. There are secret passageways. There are moments of humor. There are times when you must wait. There are times where you must act on one simple level. There's another level called Assassination that is also endlessly playable in many ways. It also has twists and turns and surprises. I haven't played Thief in 2 years. Money, space, and my goddamn Mac prevent me, but I will play Thief again, and Thief 2, and 3. I don't think Thief is the Casablanca of games. It just represents the epitome of what I'm looking for when I play video games. More tension and suspense than action. Killing is a choice, not a requirement. Success makes you feel clever, and the game touches something visceral. You take other people's stuff. So that's why I'm such a geek, and while I'll never be a console gamer, I don't need it because my game is on the PC. I have not played Thief. That's probably another one I should play.
It's actually, not the Casablanca.
I have it through Steam.
It might be the Doctor Strangelove of games.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is an entire other, like, discussion. But, yeah. Thief is pretty... I mean... You don't already love Thief. You don't already have any memory of Thief. Would make Thief 1 really, really hard for you to play.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... It wasn't pretty when it came out.
Yeah.
And when I say it wasn't pretty when it came out, it was kind of ugly when it came out. And that was a long time ago.
It was.
It's an ugly fucking game. You can fix it a little bit, but it's really very, very ugly.
Mm.
I think you have to love it a little already.
Well, and obviously I have no way. I'm neither here nor there on it, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right, because I think I was in that same vein with Half-Life when I tried to play it.
You may have a way out of that, though, coming up soon.
Yeah. That mod?
Yeah.
Yeah. That looks nice, man.
The Black Mesa? Which has been in... I'm pretty sure that the Black Mesa mod's been in development longer than the Half-Life series. I think they started it first. Yeah, if they actually ever deliver that shit, that's how you should do it.
I'll keep that in mind.
That'll probably be about the right thing to do, because I don't think it would ruin a whole lot. I don't think it would change much at all, actually, except for the red jelly confetti blood. That's sort of an important part. That's what Kevin called it.
Oh,
the blood and you would shoot them in these little like gobbets of confetti like things when you. And like,
so you wouldn't hear a bunch of like grunts go, "Yay!"
No, but it would just be like, and it was like somebody stepped on a jelly donut or something, and just like all these little gobbets of red jelly would sort of fly out. It was kind of fun, actually.
Mitchell goes on to say, regarding the possibility of the Casablanca of games being in the future, I don't know. I agree with James about the state of the industry, and it's been talked about before, so I don't think I can add anything, except that the people who get excited about video games, core gamers or whatever, seem to be the ones most actively participating in their manipulation by the large corporations that now make the games. By reading the tidbits devs hand out to game journos in bite-sized chunks, and getting on the forums to speculate endlessly by pre-ordering a game just to get a demo, by buying another multiplayer map and playing it for 2 hours, essentially by adjusting their behavior so they are doing what the devs want them to do. Hearing what they want them to hear, or by hanging on every word of the devs' message, gamers lose their perspective. When they do, the idea of internet boycotts when devs transgress somehow just becomes laughable. The real solution is to really look at what a corporation wants from you and what they're willing to give you. That would change behavior in such a way as to terrify developers and their PR minions. It occurs to me one could substitute gamers and devs in the last paragraph with voters and politicians, and it still works. Great, great, super awesome podcast. Please keep doing what you're doing.
You keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. Sending us awesome emails.
You know, one of the things that bothers me a lot is that I don't disagree at all. I think that the behavior of a large number of people is know, it's like counterproductive, but I mean, you want to talk about people starting a boycott and then not sticking to the boycott. Well, I mean, I did. I didn't officially join any boycott, but I decided I wasn't buying the game, and I didn't buy the game. And it didn't do any good, you know? Mm-hmm. I think there's so fucking many of us that I think, man, I don't know. I mean, we can get uncomfortable. We can look for a way out that follows the cliches we all know about, like voting with your wallet,
right,
or, you know, adhering to your boycott, or something like that. Just simply refusing to behave the way that publishers seem to want us to behave. But I do think that very practically speaking, the only thing you will ever get out of that is no stuff. Everyone else will be busy enjoying things to whatever degree they can still enjoy them. And you'll just get nothing. So what you've done is you've just chosen not to participate at all. I know that if we all got together and acted as one, or if we were all angry enough, despite how few of us there might be, something would happen. But it can't work like that. It's impossible for it to work like that. We are, this is totally unrelated, but since, I mean, actually, to bring up politics,
yeah,
there's a, I mean, whatever your political leanings happen to be, there's some notions running around about, like, how things like the Tea Party are supposed to work, like how grassroots, somewhat astroturfed organizations like that are how they're supposed to function. And regardless of where you actually fall on the political spectrum, they're fascinating because they're a leaderless organization. They have some primary figures, but these primary figures don't actually amount to leadership because they're either too small and too local, or they're too big and still, to some degree, too much affiliated with the established parties, with the Republican Party, or maybe Libertarian or Independents in some circumstances. So for the most part, they're not even exactly built the way like a terrorist cell is, where it's distributed amongst many leaders. It's not like that. They're like a leaderless thing. They use the biological metaphor of being a starfish. You know, how like the whole thing is it's kind of its fucking brain, and like any bit can to some degree replicate another bit. I mean, that's not exactly correct, but the point is, I think we are like that a lot of times. We feel like we have a voice. We feel like we're a type of people and a group of people, and in order to get change that we want, we need to behave a certain way. But, you know, we're a writhing mass of individuals that don't even necessarily like each other. And for a particular demographic, we have an extraordinary range of ages,
mm-hmm,
you know? Like, it's one of the few things that I understand, that because we don't all have to coexist physically, we can sort of coexist virtually in a way that wouldn't be possible in the real world. I'm not gonna hang around with people who are half my age in the real world. It wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can buy my own beer, for example. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm an older guy in a mature relationship, and like, I've already been, say, 15 or 20 years old,
mm-hmm,
before. So again, there's nothing wrong with it, and in the confines of gaming, you know, yeah, we're all kind of together. But when you get down to what kind of people we are, and what kind of people we are matters when you're talking about the sort of behavior you want to see from the entire group. I don't think it's possible at all. I'm not a defeatist, but I think if there was any time to simply believe that, well, what you should do is what suits you, then this is it. Because I don't think you can honestly affect change. Not on purpose, anyway. And when you can, it's very rare. And I think it's exceedingly rare. Even the shit that happened with Blizzard a while back, that wasn't just those people. It was about how that message was interpreted by news medias and different outlets like that and stuff. So I don't know. I mean, I agree. I think that if everybody quit fucking biting, you know, on every morsel of DLC, then they would find another way to do stuff. But I don't agree that that would necessarily be in our interests. Regardless of anything, whenever we think that what happened before was better,
yeah,
they will not agree, they being the companies, because to them it didn't monetize well. So it wasn't better. So if what happens now doesn't work, what happened before is not necessarily what they'll give us.
Mm-hmm.
They won't say, oh, we'll go back to doing that. They will clench their fist a little harder, you know? They'll try to squeeze you a little bit harder. And that's exactly what that type of organization's done. It's not like, you know, it's not like the RIAA has ever given up, regardless of how poor their efforts have performed. So, like I said, I do 100% agree, and I think it's tragic as hell. So, really, the best thing you could possibly do is just whatever you like.
Really?
Is it worth it for you to be a whore? Like, some of it is for me, man.
I know. I
eat up.
I was like, is he going to say it is? Because I really feel like some of this stuff is really worth being a whore for.
I don't know what to say. Like, I am... It kind of sets my heart a Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, when somebody who I care about, who's in control of a property I really care about, teases the possibility of an announcement concerning that property. And I will be wherever they want me to be, whenever they want me to be there, to find out what it is. And I don't think anything that I do is destructive in that way. Right. But I think the fact that there are so many of me, so many of us, who do it is. What the fuck am I going to do about that, though? Drink more.
Yeah, I was going to say something to that effect. You can't do anything.
It's totally awful. I mean, you absolutely make all the right points. But it's exactly the same thing that happens in politics. It doesn't matter. You can't get enough of a groundswell to make real change. Permanent change.
It's
temporary.
A little different analogy, but, you know, movies are kind of like the same way. I suppose. The complaints like, well, if people would stop going to see this shit, they would quit making shit. No, they wouldn't. They'd find different shit to make.
Yeah.
And it would never...
It's not like if everybody didn't go to the original trilogy of Star Wars that all of a sudden they would make The Empire Strikes Back again.
Yeah.
Or stuff like... I think that's untrue. But... I don't think it's untrue that stuff would change, and sometimes for the better. In most of those cases,
right? I don't necessarily think that you know, you have a problem with something. So if you protest it, whatever the case, if you vote with your wallet, that sort of thing, that it's ever going to change anything, or that you're going to get what you want from what you're complaining about. You're just going to have to get something that may be a lesser of the two evils, or something that's a little bit skewed differently, but maybe not, you know?
I wish there was a mechanism, and this is an entirely fantastical notion. Laser guns and space wizards, kind of fantastical. Like, I wish there was a way. Because you can't, they don't count a no sale, you know? They don't know that I didn't buy
right.
Modern Warfare 2. But if there was a way where I could go in and, like, pay a quarter...
Mm-hmm.
Right? Have a positive sale and like pay somebody a quarter to deliver a message that I fucking hate your game and I hate what you're doing. And I'll give you a quarter just to have that message delivered. You know what I mean? To like be on the books somewhere.
So they can be on the books that
I'm aware of your game.
I was possibly going to buy it, but whatever reason, that's
right. I'd like to pay a quarter to demonstrate my hatred of your game.
Yeah, you're in the, what's the name of that category? Not the undecided, but the, I don't know, whatever. They can show that, yes, you voted.
Yeah.
Basically.
Here's 2 bits. Fuck off. Make it better.
Because they can't tell. You're right. You're exactly right. I wish there was a way that they could. Yeah. I wish there was a way that they could say that, well, the person that just walked in the store... was about to pick up this game or did not, or his intent was, or their intent, whatever.
You could do something without committing, obviously.
But
that means nothing.
But it doesn't register.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, whatever. Like, I'm not going to give you any significant amount of money so that it actually requires dedication. But you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? I was like, I wish there was a way that I could be on the tower and be like, I say what you do is just plain bad. And I don't like a nerd.
Our next email comes from Joel Cruz. IGC crew, look guys, I've listened to the show since the Heavy Rain conversation started, and I know it took a bit before y'all busted the spoiler dam on that game. Could we get the discussion on the retail content of Alan Wake wrapped up? I take a while to finish stuff up, and I've got a ton of soldiers left on the wayside, but I set out to finish this one up. It took some doing, but fuck, that shit was good. I mean, whoever did the score, fucker, got chills up my spine every damn time I hear that ominous fucking music that means something might attack me. And that's the shit, guys, the might part. Sometimes shit didn't go down, but you're still there flailing about in the dark with your dinky little light and shit. My wife got a laugh out of watching me with the headphones on, jumping like a little bitch every so often. I mean, the game was scary, just not the raw make you jump kind. But with the tension building and isolation and darkness and creepiness and shit falling out of the sky shit and can I get to that fucking light? God damn it, it just blew out, you motherfucker, and all that jazz. That was a great sentence, by the way. Yeah. Anyway, just beat the damn game and I'm downloading the signal. Love the game. Would love to hear what you guys have to say about it.
We were waiting on you to finish it, weren't we?
Yeah, but with Matt not here. Mm-hmm. I can't talk about it anyway. Yeah, I still have a little.
You got a smidge left.
Yeah, I still have some to go.
Smidge that out over the.
Before we get to the next one,
smidge it, sir. Smidge it.
No, you're right. My wife laughed at me too. Like when I was playing through the first chapter, I was like, "All right, you guys sit down and play this now, so you can understand like why this freaks me the fuck out."
I've had moments where I'm like, "Man, I'm glad nobody's watching me play this."
Because you know, she played like the first chapter and a half, and she was like, "All right, yeah, that's scary shit."
Because I'd get to moments, and I'm like, "Fuck this!" I'd go back to the main menu, turn the brightness all the way up, so I can see what the fuck's out there.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't say that my opinion's necessarily. I can tell you where I am now, and it, without spoiler stuff. If they could do a proper sequel or some kind, I don't think that's in the cards, you know. The problem is that what is your objective for 80% of the game? Get through the woods.
Yeah.
Get through the woods. Like,
I haven't even played 20% of the game, and I know that's what's going to be my objective.
Get through the woods. Like all the way up through to almost the end of the game. That's your get through the woods. And like, actually, I know that Dana beat it and didn't think she was going to beat it because her current objective was get through the woods. And it's like, it's all wrong. Like, there's a lot of just fantastic, just amazingly, amazingly atmospheric stuff in it. The sense of place and setting and everything, it's fantastic. I loved it. I even didn't mind going through the woods. My problem was, I was either kind of doing some, you know, you're either doing some fun Alan Wakey stuff or you're getting through the woods. And I didn't think that, it felt like two games.
What's the fun Alan Wakey stuff?
Like,
I mean, again, 20%, I'm still like getting through the woods. What's the fun Alan Wakey stuff?
I mean, it's all the stuff like when you're not getting through the woods necessarily, when you're like getting hit by like lots of creepy non-combat things.
I haven't gotten that far yet.
Daytime stuff, I guess.
Oh, the daytime stuff.
For the most part. I mean, it's not like there's a lot of puzzles, and it's not like it's a graphic adventure, which I think it would kind of excel at in that way. I just think that, you know, actively running through the woods while things are spawning and you're trying to get to the next light thing is fantastic. They built it so well. I just think it's unrelated to a lot of the other gameplay, you know? And it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm in the woods, and I'm going to run through the woods again. And, oh, they took my gun away again. All right, thanks a lot. Great fuckers. So, I don't know, but I mean, I haven't finished it yet, so I can't talk about anything that isn't just getting through the woods.
Yeah. He goes on, question for you. Was listening to Weekend Confirmed, my secondary podcast. You fuckers are number one. And they had a good question, which, thanks, I'm glad we're number one. That's great. And they had a good question I'd like to pose to you. It was something like, have you ever been embarrassed to be a gamer? Like, would you bring it up in a job interview or with your coworkers if you're not in the industry? I mean, I get James, gal, Dana is a gamer, but do you guys have a significant other that's like, it's just this thing he does or whatever? Or does the old ultra-violence and oversexing wish fulfillment of certain games make you say, what the fuck? I run construction work, and when I say I'm a gamer, fuckers look a little askance at me. And then I ask them some asinine sports trivia that I don't give a fuck about, and they shoot out an answer. I just tell them they're a geek of a different sort. All right, I've rambled on way too long, and there's some games of shit calling my ass, so I'm out. Keep up the superb work, Joel. Fucking Christ. I tried to keep, I didn't want to get into the whole gamer thing. Like, when I would, the first time I took off work, so that I could go to PAX. They said, where are you going? I said, I'm just going up to Seattle. They're like, for what? I said, just there's a thing. But yeah, what thing? You wouldn't. I just didn't think they would give a shit. They would care, yeah. You know. And when I say gamer, it's immediate. You can see this physically happen in their body, in their in their posture, and in their eyes. You can see it physically become this. I have just stepped down on a peg on their, not necessarily ladder of respect, but definitely ladder of interest.
Yeah,
you know, I have just I. Yeah,
you know. It amuses the shit out of me. Like, I mean, I know the people you work with.
Right. Yeah.
There's...
You probably whatever. Have different experiences. See, maybe. I don't know.
It's a little bit, but it's not so much because of the people. We got a couple different worlds here. Like,
yeah.
We've got, like, kind of like the raunchy, you know, sort of like downstairs production monkeys, right? Like... The relatively like hardworking, hard drinking, like hard playing guys. Like guys who work in production are children forever, you know. Guys who are in my WoW guild are all from production here or from times past, and they're all like, you know, guys older than me. Like, they don't worry about that. The people upstairs have no concept of it outside of something that they would maybe buy for their children. I have never. Once in my entire life, ever, for even the shortest period of time, been at all embarrassed by it or concerned about it. And I think, I don't think it was intentional. I just decided, like, people do that. People are that way about it.
They are. That wasn't to say that I'm ever embarrassed about it at all.
But see, I think the problem is,
I was like, trying to avoid.
No. But see, that's part of the problem. Like, if we were taking a week off and somebody asked me exactly the same question, I'd be like, going to PAX. And they're like, what is that? I'm like, it'd be some game shit, bitches. Like,
yeah,
the shit's about games and fucking rocks. It's a bunch of cool ass people up there. I'm going to go hang out with them. And they're like, oh, do you want any game things? I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, and they're like, that's the stupidest for kids. And I'm like, you know, and like people, I hear that sometimes, but I literally laugh at them. And I'm just like, fuck you. You're so fucking stupid. Like, you know, because it's like, you know, old girl at the place when we were doing the thing and used to come in and be like, oh,
yeah,
you need a thing? No. And it's like, yeah, right. How much is the scrapbook store business worth? Right? Like, I'm sorry, but more than just little children are involved in the industry that I like to give my time and money to.
Yeah, I loved
more
his
than
little,
a couple of people doing this.
I loved his little analogy about, like, well, here's sports trivia. Look, see what you just did there? Exactly. I would love to spit something out like that, and I probably will next time it comes up.
I mean, you can do it, and it might help you.
Just
it
to show them, I'll be like, see what you know?
But it won't.
That's your world.
The problem is it won't help them know anything.
No, it won't help them.
It won't help them make a connection. You have to be impervious to it. Like, I can't imagine what it would be like to be embarrassed by it.
Nah.
It's just like, dude, I mean, I got...
I've never been in a position where I needed to be.
Yeah.
You know? By the time I started working up here...
Yeah.
You know, I was already in a position where I, you know, I was like, yeah, I'm going to PAX, because I was going to PAX. Yeah. It was right after a work conference, actually. Went up to Tennessee and then immediately flew from there to PAX. And I was like, yeah, I'm taking a week off because I'm doing that, and then I'm going to PAX. What's PAX? A video game. I'm like, yeah.
Don't worry about it. Or worry about it. I don't care.
Yeah, I know.
And like, and if you're
they've known for
way,
the longest time that we do the show, and like they're,
and if you're that way about it,
then they just get curious about it. Then they try to like pump you in for information and be like, I want
to. They try to get.
Should I listen to your thing? I was like, no. There's nothing in it for you.
See, my thing was when I went to E3, and they called me. I said, hey, I'm going to LA. It's this, you know, this thing. It's a game. That's all I'll ever say is like, yeah, it's another gaming thing. But I come back from E3 and they're like, you were in LA, weren't you? And I was like, yeah. My kid was watching.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
My kid, you were at that? Yeah. I told my son that you were at this thing and he was like, ooh, you know, all interested in shit. So all
See,
of a sudden.
That's what you can try. That's what you can do. You can be like, just ask your kid. Your kid will get it.
Yeah.
Like, tell your kid what I'm doing. Watch the look on their face. There you go. You'll understand. Mm-hmm. A little bit. You'll understand. Just realize that when you understand that, it's not just for kids. That's the whole mistake. And then you can't see past it. And then, Well, and then there's the other thing. Like, some girls don't get it, but it's like, whatever.
Yeah. We both had girls that didn't get it. Yeah. And neither of us have those girls anymore.
Now we have girls that get it.
tell a story about an old girl up here that was like, oh, my husband played games, and I come home, and I put my foot down, and I'm like, oh.
And see, I even like her. She's one of my favorites.
Oh, I know, but that's like how, yeah. like, but sort of your relationship with her started off, right?
No, well, kind of, yeah, but she was like, and it was funny, because, like, she's totally great, and she's completely a dork in her own regard,
right,
for God's
right.
sake, but... She was like, I just don't put up with that crap, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, whatever. I wouldn't put up with that crap.
No, yeah, really.
And she kind of had this sort of, she had this default moral position where, well, I just put my foot down about it. And it's like, well, I wouldn't give a shit if you put your foot down. Like, I am actually immune to that sort of thing. I don't care. You know, I like your husband. I feel real bad for him. If he wants to sit down and play some Fallout for a while, I really hate the fact that he's being nagged by it. I mean, it's not an either or. I know how to spend time with my girlfriend. We spend mm-hmm. plenty of time together. And don't get me wrong, it's something that I did have to learn a little bit. Mm-hmm. So you have to learn to modulate those things. And there is a way to be super immature about it.
Yeah.
And I have been that. But it's just funny. I am 100% immune to all criticism about that. Always have been. I mean, and for the longest time, it wasn't because I was so self-aware, and it wasn't because I was so certain of my own convictions. It was because I was too excited about the thing I liked to understand or even care, you know? I was like, if you don't understand how cool it is that I'm going to E3, you know, 98, then you and I clearly can't even speak.
Yeah.
You know, I can't communicate with you. And, like, you can consider it beneath somebody who's my age, but I'm just, like, I just don't understand. I'm just absolutely immune to it. And I literally just think it's funny. And I rarely do that. I rarely just laugh off somebody else's concerns about anything. But anytime somebody tries that, and it's, the other thing is that they're so ignorant of it, in general. The kind of person you would be afraid to let know that... Assuming you would get into some sort of, assuming it would be like, I don't want to say a conflict thing, but, you know, if it's a peer, for example, they don't know enough about it to even really criticize it. They've only got one or two avenues of attack, and they're ancient potholed avenues at that. Like, that's for kids. Well, you really don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You just don't know what you're talking about. And... if it's the truth, you can tell them that with such conviction that they know that you're right. They don't know what they're talking about. So you just disarm them immediately. It becomes judo, you know? Like, they have no way to get at you. As far as, like, bringing it up with a boss-type creature or something, I mean, I don't know.
Really.
Man. I've only ever worked for people in video game stores or people who were computer geeks.
Like
entire
in an interview, like I'm not really prone to discuss any of my hobbies, you know. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, if asked,
wouldn't come
though,
up
like,
there,
pointedly.
But yeah, then yeah, I would absolutely bring it up. Sure.
I haven't relayed this story in some time, but I pulled the same shit whenever we started doing this show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's like,
oh,
hey,
now I remember that. Yeah. You're all like, no, it's about like.
About, you know,
tech stuff and computer stuff,
yeah,
and
totally
current
yeah.
tech events.
Totally. God damn. I remember, oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, I remember going up to him and thinking no way he's going to go for this first. You
right.
know.
Right.
So I better disguise this so that, you know, and so totally told him it would be, you know, can we have some time? Do you mind us doing this? On this radio station, it'll be about gadgets and blah, blah, blah. I know you're looking for more local, you know, shows and that sort of thing. And he was like, okay with it. And yeah. And then from then on, all it ever was on certain days that we did our show was like, are you guys doing your little gaming thing tonight? Yeah. I'm like, yep, we are.
It's kind of like I was thinking about ways that they're related to this. You said that... when you mentioned that you're a gamer, the look on the people, someone's face, you could see the visual.
Certain people, yeah, definitely.
Like visual disappointment and whatnot. I equated to tell anybody out of state that you're from Alabama. What's the first thing in their mind? every yeah, negative yeah. Southern stereotype that you can think of instantly pops into their head.
Yeah.
When I was in Jersey, someone said, first words out of that person's mouth was, "Where's your accent?" Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm in Jersey, and you have the audacity to ask me about accents. Yeah. So I know the feeling about that that embarrassment of saying that gamer. I mean, no embarrassment. If you like what you like, you're gonna go do it, regardless of what anybody feels about it. You know, and the feeling that it's for kids, nothing's further from the truth.
Yeah, I mean, I don't flaunt it, but I'm not. Yeah. Well, I don't know if that's. I mean, I don't wear like gamer clothing necessarily or anything. We got some game T-shirts and stuff like that. Not because I find that embarrassing, but like, you know, just as a general rule, I don't brand myself. I'm kind of like a. I don't know. I always feel dumb wearing things with like things on. You know, other people seem to look fine, but I always feel really stupid if I wear things with logos on them. I mean, if you're a girl, you can get away with whatever you want to do. You know, mm-hmm. like my one of the girls in my guild, whose husband works here in production, like she can wear her World of Warcraft Druid shirts all the time. That makes her cute. If I did it, I don't know what it would make me.
Especially in that size,
it wouldn't have exactly the same effect, you know.
Right.
Like a girl can get away with whatever she wants to do whenever she wants to do it, and that's all there's to it.
Guys usually have a different. Odd.
Do what?
You'd be officially labeled as odd.
Yeah, I mean, it becomes like a different thing to uphold. And we used to have like there would be people.
Wish Dennis was here.
Hear it, yeah.
Because every time I see him, he's always in.
Oh, he has no problem.
Something that is displaying his.
I do about half and half around here.
Yeah.
Like, you know, some days I'll wear some button-up shirt thing, but not like, you know, white button-up shirt. It's always like got some pattern, or it's a Hawaiian shirt or something. But like, bit like very very casual office kind of thing. And then like the other half of the time, I've got some sort of T-shirt. Which about half of the time that I wear a T-shirt, it's a gamer shirt. Yeah. So
nobody has any problem with it.
No,
like
no.
We wear our Kane and Lynch shirts with like machine guns on them, you know. And nobody like we just walk into the office. Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
I've noticed one of the things that's helped me when I've encountered that sort of thing is, you know, you say something about games and somebody gets that look on their face, and I'm like, yeah, well, you know, I ran a game store for 5 years.
Yeah.
And like we do a podcast about games, and like, you know, it's, you know, then they get the idea that, oh, this is sort of a serious thing.
Yeah.
And like, yeah.
The best thing to do, and I know a lot of you guys don't have the chance to do this, and if you don't, you're actually missing out on something exceptionally cool. What you need is a wingman, right? Either deliberate or natural. So if you and your buddy are somewhere, like one of the things I like to do is I go down to the production, you know, the scene shop, and I'll talk to my buddies down there. Mm-hmm. And, like, me and one of my buddies down there like to talk about, like mobile phones and, like, you know, telecom tech. Mm-hmm. Like, that sort of stuff. Like, that's his big geeked out thing. And, like, we totally talk about that, and it's great. And then I'll go down there and talk to, like, you know, I go down and talk to Andrew about guns or something. You know, that's fun, like, talking to him about guns. But then I'll go down and talk to Charlie about something like Warcraft, and we'll sit there and just be like blah, 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 you know, using like your own weird ass gamer patois, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Just all this inside kind of cant, and everyone around you has no idea what the hell you're talking about. And that's what's really awesome. You're not talking to them, you're not involving them in any way, you are simply involved in like a really intense conversation about your thing, and you don't have to, you know, pull like there's an easy way to do it without like coming off as a nerd. You're just talking about something using the very specific language of that thing, and they almost always get fascinated because they know the words, like they recognize the meaning of the individual words, but they have no idea what the conversation's about.
Mm-hmm.
And so they realize that they're not even like whatever's happening is so far out of their depth, like that they just can't. They can't even hate it because they don't know what the fuck it is, but they know that it's very far beyond them.
Right.
It's so far out of their reach that they can't even make fun of it. So it's it's an interesting little phenomenon to watch happen. And then inevitably one of them will say, well, God, I don't recognize any of what they're saying. And then what you do is ignore them. That's fucking great. You just simply have to adopt a position of power. Like, you're like, whatever, this is who I am, man. It's the thing I like. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm going to, you know, that I'd bring it up on a first date necessarily.
Yeah, I know in the workplace how it affected me is, you know, I mentioned I'm play games. I'm a gamer. You know, all the people in the company ask me questions about, like, for instance, about the ratings board. The ratings, what is these icons in the corner mean? All that, you know, that I explained about the ratings. Or should I get this game for my 7-year-old? What's the game? Grand Theft Auto.
Nope.
Mm.
Yes, and must buy.
If the title alone doesn't give you a clue.
Mom approved.
Yes.
I don't know what to tell you, you know?
That's what that M stands for.
Yeah, get a Mortal Kombat when he comes out. Yeah, get him that.
T's for toddler, so get it for the little one.
On the other, like you said, you wouldn't bring it up on a first date, but on the other side of that, like if...
If
whoever it is like can't deal with it, then fuck them.
Yeah, that's an easy way to. That's something you really don't want to do. I don't know if anybody's out there like in that position. But
mm-hmm. It is not a good place to be.
If you like it, you like it. You know, whatever it is, like it's.
And they don't have to be like super into it or anything.
No, well, it really helps. It really helps if they find it fascinating.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I don't think Dana gave a shit when we started going out.
Mm-hmm.
And all we had was, like, I had my PS2. I was without a computer at the time, but I had my PS2 and that old 13-inch TV of hers.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, so I took my PS2 over to her place because I didn't have, like, you know, work and shit at my house. And, like, played Vice City on that little 13-inch TV. And she thought it was the coolest thing in the world. You know, mm-hmm. She would just be like, make him do this other stuff. And I'm like, okay. You know, and we'll go, like... We'll go do all this other crap. And, like, I think I really won her over when I won one of the circuit races in GTA 3. And, like, my car was on fire about 200 yards from the end of the... from the end of the thing, you know? And I'd, like, run this crazy fucking race. And she was, like, all into it, man. And, like, my car was on fire and going to blow up. I was like, motherfucker. And, like, across the finish line and, like, jumped out of the car and, like, rolled. And the car exploded and I won.
How much time did you have to spare between diving out and just...
As I was coming out of the car and, like, you know, hit the pavement and rolled, it exploded.
Those moments are great.
That's the greatest thing I've ever seen. I was like, yeah, I'm pretty awesome.
Well, you know, the first time I went over to Becky's apartment, I was installing a video card so she could play The Sims 2.
I already knew
I was in safe territory there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's some shaky ground to not necessarily shaky. It's just...
What, having to install somebody's video card?
And yeah, really.
Yeah,
it's,
but
that's,
I mean,
tough.
Not for him. Not for me. He's already like at like master's level accomplishment with that. So he gets to like flaunt his skill. You know, he gets to make it look easy.
No, that's not what I was talking about.
I wouldn't want to do it if I was you.
I'm just talking about anytime you're venturing into that new relationship territory, and.
Putting your hands on somebody's video card?
Metaphorically.
Touching their daughter board?
How'd we get here?
I'm not really sure. Somebody asked a question about something.
It started with being embarrassed by games. Right. Telling people.
I'm actually growing embarrassed by the conversation.
Yeah, we can stop. We can move on. But anyway, as it used to be something they found out, now it's the first thing that they find out.
Oh.
In developing a relationship.
Yeah,
however
it kind of should. Just because you save yourself time.
Yeah.
I didn't take care of this shit early on in like my first marriage, and I wound up having to put a rear view mirror on my fucking PC so that I could see when she was tapping her foot in the doorway. That's not a place you want to be.
Yeah.
You really don't. I'm not actually kidding about that. I totally couldn't on my computer desk. Because she'd stand behind me and get
I was really happy when Becky came home after being gone visiting her sister and parents for a week. And she's like, man, I'm really glad to be watching you play your games. Their games are boring. Because they play sports games.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's obviously
the only downside, and it's not much of a downside considering the trade off, but sometimes you get stuck not being able to finish a game until she gets back.
Pain in the ass.
Because she needs to see what happens. So.
Oh, that's. Mine's about to go away for a while.
Oh yeah.
I don't know that I'll be able to finish Alan Wake.
I thought she was playing Alan Wake herself, though.
She beat Alan Wake.
Oh well, then.
No, you don't understand. It's not like that. She doesn't. She's not watching to see. She's watching to see me.
Oh, okay.
All right. You know. She needs to know, how did you feel about that thing?
Yeah.
She's one of those people that really wants to go see a movie with you that she's already or that they've already seen.
Well, yeah, or something like yeah. She really, really needs to know how. All right, so what did you think about that at the end of Act 4 or whatever? Yeah, stuff like that. So, whatever. I may just be like, I forgot. We'll find out.
All right.
Hey, look, another email.
Yeah, another email from Ravenlock. Says, hey, I actually listened to your show when it came out. I never do that. It does mean, though, that I can email you about stuff you talked about and have it be kind of relevant. Crazy. I largely agree where you guys came to on Bioshock 2. I didn't hate the idea, and having played it, I also don't hate the game, but I wasn't excited for it because the first game relied so much more on atmosphere and character than it did on gameplay, and Rapture, bereft of its people, ceased to be an interesting concept for me. Without Andrew Ryan, without Fontaine, without the people whose stories tied off by the first game, I didn't really care about that place anymore. And to be honest, they did need to essentially retcon a whole new conflict into their story just to make a sequel out of it. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but it felt like a stretch because it was one.
Yeah, that actually was weird. That was kind of jarring.
Yeah.
The whole... I'm pretty sure Andrew Ryan would have brought this up. I'm sure this would have come up.
I know him, and I think this is what he would have done.
Right.
On the topic of Bioshock Infinite, I'm interested to see where they go, but honestly, the trailer rubbed me the wrong way a bit. The underwater opening felt like a great trick. Ha, you guys made me think I was back in Bioshock, but I'm not. You ripped me out of the water, and now it's going to be totally different. But then you get a clockwork Big Daddy and a lady using sky plasmids and a bunch of ominous ideological posters and old-timey music, and oh, actually, it is just Bioshock again. Honestly, it felt like a bit of creative letdown when the beginning of the trailer was clearly trying to signal we've moved in a new direction. Yeah, okay, up is a new direction, but I'm not sure I'm sold. Listening to Ken Levine talk about it on some podcasts has gotten me more interested in keeping an eye on it. He clearly has some fresh ideas he wants to try, and the game-long AI companion is a bold move, but I still came away a little cold after hearing another first-person shooter with magic stuff and real big smashy robot guys in a retro dystopia. Pitch. Here's hoping I end up pleasantly surprised. Keep up the great work, Ravenlock.
The worst part about what they showed was that they didn't really show anything. I mean, as far as I understand it, all of the videos that they showed to the press still haven't been made public. Still haven't been released for public consumption. Hmm. Right? I mean, I haven't run across any of them, and you know that I usually kind of go out of my way to devour videos. I mean, am I wrong about this?
Yeah.
I am wrong about this?
No.
Sorry, I'm not your fucking phone, Scott, but maybe you could listen to me. What are you doing? I don't want to. I want to know what you're doing. Do you have to go back to work?
I'm making sure.
Put it on the show.
Do I need to get up? Do it. You can call me if you want to. I may be asleep, but you can call me. Bye.
There you go.
What was that?
Everything's all right with the world. We're fine.
Right.
It just scared me. I did a lot of shit today, and if he's calling me, that's the engineer. And if he's calling me to tell me that the shit didn't work, I got a lot of shit I got to do tomorrow then, but everything's fine. So.
Okay.
That was my biggest fear, and I wanted to know that now rather than wait until after the show to find out. So my apologies for that.
No, it's okay. You just fucked up,
the entire show.
The whole thing. I mean, sorry.
Wouldn't be a podcast. It wouldn't be an IMGM chat if I didn't fuck something up.
Yeah, that's fine. As long as you can admit that, that's the truth.
Oh, yeah, no, totally. Not a show goes by that doesn't escape me.
That's not always true. I just feel better if it wasn't. I know that they had to be consciously creating homage to the first trailer, to the first like canned trailer for BioShock,
mm-hmm.
because the two of them are, they're not identical, but they're extremely, extremely close in terms of like tone and pacing and everything. You know, like first person perspective of somebody getting the shit beat out of them. I don't know. I just would like to see something, you know. I'm weary of being shown something that isn't anything, and then having everything colored in by a guy like Ken Levine, whose genius I recognize, but and I also know he's a pitch man. I also know it's his job to just kind of get up there and create happy thoughts about what he's showing me. You know, mm-hmm. instead of simply letting the thing speak for itself. There are too many times when, I mean, I don't know, man. Like, did the Portal 2 video need Gabe Newell sitting up there telling you and explaining to you through every scene why it's awesome? No. Now, this is why it's awesome. So if you think about what I'm doing, you recognize that what you're actually seeing is awesome, regardless of what your first thought might have been. This is awesome. I'm going to show you the video and then tell you about why what you just saw was awesome. No, I just saw it. Like, awesome is self-evident. And I know that the dominant, that's how it's done.
Yeah.
But I don't like it. You know, and whatever sort of imaginary adventures, like, I can kind of conjure up about what's going to be happening in BioShock Infinite, I actually don't know shit about the game yet. I know what I've been told. I've seen the canned video. It's not enough to get me excited. It's not enough to make me believe that what will follow is any different than what followed all of the other dry mm-hmm. speeches and canned videos I've seen. If you want me to believe something better about you, then deliver something better to me. It's we use a lot of cliches about taking things to the next level and stepping up game and all of these sort of just tired, fucking stretched out, you know, wafer thin, like, you know, fig leaves for how people spend their time and their money. But you need to do it. And I'm very sorry if you've got the hand of your publisher on your shoulder, but I'm very sorry. It's not my hand, it's not my shoulder. You're trying to sell me an idea here. And I've been sold a lot of ideas. And they weren't dicks about it, man, but they really kind of let it be known that they wanted to go off in another creative direction ahead of Infinite, you know? Mm-hmm. They did. There was kind of the feeling that surrounded them. And even if they didn't actively cultivate it, which I kind of think they did, but even if they didn't, they certainly didn't do anything to dissuade it. Like, they fed the idea. And then this is what they deliver. And it's like, man, I think you need to be working a little bit harder on the hearts and minds. This hearts and minds battle is starting to be lost, you know? I don't know. I mean, I figure I should just be excited, and I'm not. I mean, it's kind of interesting, you know, some of the ideas that came around after its announcement, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe everybody was just ahead of the curve on me where BioShock 2 was concerned, and they were already in that place, but I don't know. I'm prepared not to like it, though.
I'm still waiting to see. I didn't even play BioShock 2 much. I had it, never didn't really play it. Heard some pretty good things about it, but I, you know.
The worst being that, like, it gets better toward the end. Like, as it goes on, it gets better. That's always hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it goes on, it should stay good, is a better thing to be. As it goes on, it gets better. It can be kind of crappy if you don't enjoy the first,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
however long.
In order to know that ahead of time, too, because that's kind of rough to go into. It can even dissuade you from going into it. Next email comes from Sean. Says, dear, wait. What if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension. I've found the gateway. Sliders. great
emphasis
show.
Scott.
That was me. Now, some may consider the show to be somewhat of a Quantum Leap ripoff, but I think the first season is well worth watching. It's a shame it went downhill from there. Anyway, it's been a long time coming, but my expensive and somewhat impulsively bought Wii finally has a reason to return from its long-standing exile. Having not seen it, far less played a game on it, for the last 8 months, the time has come for it to get some much-needed use. Metroid Other M has finally arrived, and I plan on spending some long-overdue alone time with my gal Samus. Now, I know you guys don't really play or talk about Wii games, but I think this one should be considered a worthy exception. Also, what do you guys, and in particular RJ, think of the recently released and, in my opinion, excellent Vanquish demo? The game's ridiculously hectic, and while playing, I couldn't help but think that the guys who made it must have been working on an extremely high alcohol and purple haze-rich environment. After doing a little research, I discovered that the dev team were the same cats that created Bayonetta. Enough said. Thanks for the great show, Sean.
You played it, yeah?
Yeah, I have not.
I don't know how that slipped past me. I was unaware that it had already come along.
Yeah, it was on the recent PSN update, yeah, but it should be out for Xbox 360 now, I believe.
Okay,
I think
yeah,
it is.
They think it is, but it's just what you said. It is a fast-paced, hectic third-person shooter. It's got a lot of flair, just like you see in Bayonetta. I got a feeling that the story though is going to be a little throwaway because all the characters in there found kind of generic. Like Sam is some college athlete who got injured and now he's working for the military. You got your spunky head of operations, smart doctor, and this overbearing commander. Looks like that dude Marcus Fenix in Gears of War.
Right.
A lot of generic stuff that they've taken from other games, but the actual game itself, it's pretty. It's pretty good. I encourage people to go out and download and give it a try, especially if you love the shooters. One thing that gets me, though, is there was no jump option. I mean, I'm not used to games of that nature not having a ability to jump. I mean, you got dodge and whatnot, and the boost basically slide along the ground at a really high speed.
Yeah.
Things like that. But I thought it would have been really nice to have a jump option in there because there's a lot of things that you want to get over, taking cover.
There's no vault. You can't vault over.
You can vault over, but you got to be in cover.
Right, cover. Yeah.
You know, you can't just like directly jump over. I don't need to go cover. Just jump over this thing and go.
It's always bothered me in Gears.
That is that the same? I never played Gears.
It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, Gears never had a jump. They had
before you can ever vault over something. Well, they had like the roadie
the roll thing, yeah.
And then like the kind of roll out of the way. And then, like, in order to vault over cover, you had to take cover behind it. I never liked that mechanic.
To take cover, press A. To vault over cover, press A.
Like, forward.
Forward and A, yeah.
We know what that is. That's.
I'm trying to think of some other thing.
You only got so many buttons on a controller.
I didn't like. I know that there's a bullet time option, there's a bullet time, like, feature in there. Mm-hmm. What I didn't like was that. When you're near death, it automatically kicks in. I didn't like that part. It was like it felt like it's holding your hand to go through that thing. Maybe in a higher difficulty that option is not there. Maybe. Hopefully.
Well, you
hopefully
know how the Bayonetta guys are. Mm-hmm. So, I said you know how the Bayonetta guys are, so.
Yeah, but let's see the difficulty. Difficulty not really that hard, at least not the demo. But like I said, hopefully for some more difficulty when the final version comes out. But it is, but it's definitely worth the look. I enjoy it. I enjoy my time with it.
Yeah, I remember seeing it at E3. So they had us in a little room watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And people could ask questions. And I know somebody asked about the story, and which, you know, should ask about. But I kind of just rolled my eyes about that because I was like, I don't care about the story. I just want to see him do more shit on the screen. You know, show me all this other stuff that this thing can do. Mm-hmm. I went into about whoever he's a doctor, but I didn't care about that. I really didn't. All I wanted to see was more of the stuff that they've been in. Same way with Bayonetta. Mm-hmm. I didn't really care about what the story was in Bayonetta. I just wanted to, you know, make big fucking monsters out of the hair and do whatever. Just fun shit. So that was the same way I was with Vanquish. So, but glad you liked it. Glad it stuck with you.
Yeah. I'll take a look at it when it comes out.
As for Metroid,
when's it coming out?
It's coming out in October, correct? 16th, something like that.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
October's kind of halfway interesting now.
Yeah, really. But Metroid Other M, did you get any?
I got it from GameFly today. So it's sitting at home in its envelope, and I'm, you know, a little scared of what's inside that envelope waiting on me. But definitely going to play it.
A little nervous about
that? Hoping for the best, expecting something in between the worst and the best. I've seen a lot of good stuff, and I've seen a lot of stuff that made me raise an eyebrow. So I don't know. I have no idea really what to expect from it. So so find out when I get home.
Yeah, let us know. Yeah, Vanquish comes out October 19th. Next email comes from Nabokov fan. He wrote us back from the last email we never read. Going to hit on a couple of his points in this
Nabokov
email.
Nabokov likes to write epic poems.
He likes to write.
That's what it is. And Scott doesn't ever go through ahead of time and sort of pare down emails. So it's like he'll open the email and be like, oh. Yeah, okay, there's a lot of stuff there.
And I get next email.
And I get no consideration to that fact before the show.
The first point he brings up are your first PC build. Story time, everyone. Share your experiences. What was building the first one like for you?
Molestation. Yeah. I had it, well, okay, it's because it's like this. Because it wasn't exactly a first build. Mm-hmm. It was like a first upgrade. Yeah. And I had an over-the-counter or like off-the-shelf PC. And like some friends were like, no, man, you can like totally like upgrade this shit. And I was like, I don't know, man. There's a sticker on there that says like, avoid the warranty. They're like, fuck you. And they cut the sticker off, like tearing shit open. And I'm like, what the fuck, man? What's going on? And they're like, no, this does this and this does this. Now do this. And I was like, okay. Does that mean it's broken or is it right? No, I think it's right. Now do this. Do it. And I'm like, okay. Ah. So, I don't know. That's how that was. Building it the first time was... I don't know, man. It was like... Yeah, I have no idea. Like, it's scary. It's like, I need an adult.
At least in my case, I was happy.
How old were you when you built
your house? I was in my 20s, like early 20s.
I was happy to do it my first time building a computer because I was stuck using this Gateway POS for years and years on end.
Yeah.
So that's when I started getting in touch with you and James about parts to get and whatnot. We all came up with this list and I finally bought them all to just start sticking stuff together. It was a tedious exercise, but yeah, it was worth it in the end.
Did you lose a SATA drive in one of your early builds?
Mm-mm. Did I lose?
No, like lose one. Like, did one of them get killed?
Mm-mm. No.
I thought we knew somebody who was building their stuff. Maybe it was Chris? Who, like, it was right when they started, like, releasing SATA drives.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really, really easy.
Oh, to break the connectors off?
No, not to break the connectors, to confuse the, on some of the connectors to confuse the power and the data.
Huh. I don't remember that.
I don't, because I remember,
I do remember that they shipped with both power connectors, the SATA power and the Molex power, and you were not supposed to hook both up at the same time, but you had to actually, like, read to know that.
Okay.
So people were, like, hooking both of them up. And it was frying the
drive.
And
they're frying the shit, yeah. I swear I know somebody that put the...
Mess with something earlier.
Put the power, like, jammed, like, forced the power onto the data.
Fuck.
They're not really the same size, so I don't know if that was on the board.
Well, they go in a different direction, too, don't they?
Yeah. But I think it may have been on the board or something like that. Mm. It might have been board specific. I don't know. I just know that that was confusing, because the first time I got a SATA drive, I was like, ah!
I made that mistake myself, both power and data power and whatever connected at the same time. It didn't, but it didn't take effect until like about a week after powering the thing up.
You know,
then eventually found out you're not supposed to have them both in there. They pop one off. It was fine since then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was probably pretty common.
You
got
to read the
stuff
to do. You had to read it to know it.
Yeah,
because it was very common and like the didn't make any sense after years and years of like, you know, Molex power and like IDE connectors.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't confuse the two of them.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't like all this shit looks the same. Yeah, I felt like I needed adult supervision the first time I was building a computer. That's the sort of thing where you realize, I shouldn't be allowed to do this on my own. This is scary.
I don't remember when the first time, or even if I ever like completely built one from scratch for myself was, because the first time I ever like tore the guts out of a machine, my main machine was a 486, but I had my my old XT still around, which is the machine I had before I got a 486, and at school like they had this spare 286 motherboard, and it was like the shit that would fit in my XT case. I'm like, and they didn't want it. So I was like, I'm taking that shit home and put it in my XT. Turn my XT to a 286. So, you know, I tore everything out and replaced the motherboard, which, you know, had the CPU already on it. And I can't remember if I had to swap some of the dip chip RAM out or not. I think there was something about that I had to do something with. But, and got it booted up, and I was like, oh, that's crazy. That's great. And I had never used it. I remember my granddad told me later, he's like, I saw you with that thing torn apart. And I was like, well, that's a computer that'll never work again. So he was impressed that I got it working. And then the next time I did anything, it was on my 486, which was a DX33. And it was getting a little long in the tooth because the Pentiums were out. And so I went to a local computer store and picked up an AMD 5K86, which was basically a 486 that ran at 133 megahertz. Got some RAM with it, and it took 72 pin RAM. My old board took 30 pin. What were they? SIMs? Yeah, SIMs. And it had like both slots, so I pulled like the 4 megs that I had on my old board and put it with the 16 megs I had on my new board, and had 20 megs of RAM.
Nice.
And it turned out that like my Visa local bus card didn't like the motherboard. And, like, the more I used it, the less it wanted to actually power on in post. So eventually I had to replace it with a PCI card. So I guess you could sort of consider that my first time. And, you know, after that, like, I remember just never having a case on my computer and like having a hard drive connected just by the cables and hanging off the side. Yep. Like, that's just how I lived, you know.
You've just been living in one long computer build.
Yeah. You know, I'd eventually replace the case, and then I'd eventually replace the motherboard, and eventually replace the video card. But I can't remember ever just like being like, I'm replacing my entire rig at one time. So
no less scary now.
Yeah.
Than it ever was.
I've done it for a lot of other people though, build a thing from scratch, and I guess so that's what I'll end up doing here when I get back into the whole PC gaming thing, because there ain't shit other than my case on my P4 that's going to be reused. So
he goes on to say that is everyone building a PC because they want to have new hardware and get back into it, or is it just a matter of consoles slowing down?
Oh, I think it's both.
Yeah,
I don't think there's any one factor. I think it was always nice just to have like slick rig, you know, and play some slick rig type of shit. And it's also like, you know, consoles just aren't, they inspire no awe anymore. Mm-hmm. They're solid, pretty good, but, you know, they can't blow you away right now.
And I've been living in, you know, console land, which is a particular type of place, for a long time now. So looking over at the sort of shit you can do in PC land, which I haven't done for a very long time now, and I'm like, yeah, that's really different. I want to go do that.
Look at that grass.
I'm really bored of where I'm at.
Mine was like, man, look at those prices on Steam. Fucking A, Steam's got a holiday sale. I don't even have a PC, but I'm buying this shit.
In my case, it was just matters of performance for me. But gaming-wise, it was always nice. I always thought in the back of my mind, it was always nice to have that option. If I ever pick up a PC game, I'll be able to do so at any given time.
That's a very good option to have.
I was going to ask you, RJ, do you find... I don't know. We've talked about it here, or at least I know James has mentioned it. People with a PC are like, are you picking that up on PC or getting that on the console? That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But what are you playing on the PC? You've got Borderlands, but you play it on the PS3, right?
Borderlands, I play it on the PS3. I've been tempted to play it on a PC because I've got some friends of mine who played exclusively on that.
Yeah.
Portal. I play on a PC. Never got a chance to play it, but I had a chance to do it, and it was just was free that mm-hmm. weekend on Steam. I got it. Alien
Swarm.
Thank you. Alien Swarm was one I picked up. I just installed it. I hadn't got a chance to play it yet. Mostly I've played the MMORPG on PC. Yeah. More than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you play MMORPGs?
The last one I played was Fantasy Star Universe before the server shut down, but I haven't been able to play anything else after that. But yeah.
Let's see. Why is everyone so afraid of PC gaming and its issues when quite clearly everything on the PC side is now on the console side? Wouldn't people be more inclined to open a PC box and swap a processor or video card if they didn't have to spend so much money on yellow lighting PS3, new incarnations with brighter screens, built-in features, or removed ones?
No, they wouldn't.
Because they wouldn't have to put those brighter screens in themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, like...
They don't no want joke, like, user serviceable shit.
No, no. Like, we're talking about, man, there's a guy that works here that has a PS3. He's perfectly happy playing his PS3, you know? But whatever, I work on everybody's machines here. And when I first got here, he had, like, local admin rights on his machine. And There was a thing where there was a handful of people that did, and inevitably all of them got gummed up with malware and all sorts of crap, and they got to be where they couldn't do their work on them because there was so much shit on them because they don't know how to use a computer, let alone how to operate on it. And so, you know, over time I'd go in there and be like, all right, it's all fucked up. We're gonna just wipe your machine, put a fresh install of Windows on it. And, you know, at the same time, lock it down so that they can't install things on it anymore. Because they don't have time to go around and clean up everybody's machines behind them, you know? So, I mean, everything's great now. But, no, man, those people cannot... They can't deal with that sort of thing, man. They just can't. So it's not going to get to a place where they can unless PCs become... more like consoles in that they're not user serviceable and everything is digitally authorized by the vendor, at which point it's not a PC anymore.
I was going to say, then it loses its... Yeah.
Yeah. They don't... Yeah.
People don't... Regular people don't need PCs. They need appliances. Mm-hmm. They need web appliances.
They need apps in their TV.
To some degree, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not... I mean, it's...
I'm not knocking apps in your TV.
No, and I'm not knocking people who need that because you have to care about this shit kind of every day to some extent. You know, you have to care enough to know how to find the right answers. You don't have to have every right answer at mm-hmm. the tip of your tongue, you know? But you have to, it has to be kind of fun or interesting to you to do this kind of problem solving and to learn why it works the way it does. And if you don't want to play... If you don't want to play that pirated-ass copy of Hidden and Dangerous bad enough, you're never going to learn about, like, you know, configuring software that way. You're mm-hmm. never going to learn how to download 50 different pieces of some blown-up, wears-ass shit
mm-hmm.
and, like, hack it together from some cross-regional... patch and then, like, go grab, like, a French executable and, like... You know, hex edit that shit so that it knows what's going on over here. Like, no, they don't want that bad enough. They just want it to work.
Mm-hmm.
See, I desperately needed to play Hidden and Dangerous.
When their computer breaks, and by breaks, I mean gets enough malware on it that they can't use it anymore, they go buy another PC. They treat it the same way that... that we treat broken 360s say, yeah. and PS3s.
Or broken appliance.
And they're too expensive to treat that way. So no, they're not gonna come over here just because, like, you know, there's patching and stuff now on the console.
Yeah. I see your reasoning. I totally do. And to somebody like you, somebody like any of us, it's totally rational.
Yeah, you hang out with people like us online all the time and you start to think that, like, well, yeah, anybody should be able to handle
this. There's a real possibility for PC gaming in the future. I mean, and one of the arguments that's I suppose, correct in sort of the broadest terms, but it's really just wrong, is that PC gaming is the ultimate market because everybody has PCs. You know, like, not everybody has consoles, but I can deliver a PC game to anybody with a PC. And I mean, the reality is you have to develop for the lowest common denominator of hardware and user, mm-hmm. whatever that intersection is. And that intersection is named Farmville.
Yeah.
And that's that's not PC gaming. That's appliance gaming, or that's web gaming. It's a different thing.
App gaming.
It's not PC gaming. We all know what it means. PC gaming requires hardware. And that's all there is to it. So you, for that intersection, you have to want both a certain type of game, and you have to be possessed of a certain kind of love, or at least appreciation and respect for hardware. And that's all there's to it. And that's all that will be to it for the foreseeable future. There hasn't been... Forget about overall sales. How these things actually function hasn't changed in, you know, decades now.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. Got to hack together some shit. You got to have some expertise. You got to understand software troubleshooting in order to make it work right. It's gotten a bit easier, but it's also got more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the same as it ever was in some respects. So the best we can hope to do, instead of, you know, enjoying the thing with our many millions of true brothers, is to just revel in our elitism. The fact that there never will be an enormous number of us of that kind. Anyway.
Iron Past writes in, says, "Hey all, on what is sure to be a fun topic for this show, I wanted to give what I hope will be a quick opinion on the live price hike. First, unlike most, the Xbox Live price hike."
What is that? I've never heard anything about that anywhere. Sorry, I was going to try to carry that through to some sort of...
First, unlike most people, I'm sure I'm not mad or angry. I'm just annoyed. If you want to be transparent and tell me, hey, it's not 2002 and there's a lot more people on Live now, then okay. We'll bitch and moan and get over it like every other price inflation for every other service over the last 8 years. But... tying it into all this bullshit that clutters the dashboard touches me in the wrong place.
Your daughter board?
Yep. When things like Twitter, Facebook, and so on existed on my dashboard, an area I never went into and never impacted my time other than existing, I didn't care. However, implying that things ESPN3 and Hulu Plus and the like are the reason for the price increase makes me wish the people that came up with that shit were fired. I mean, when was the last time Microsoft enhanced anything on the Dash or Live related to gaming on their video game console? I suppose we get a new voice codec this year, so yippee. That move just seems to fly in the face of oft-requested features like clan support, cloud storage, opt-out ads, and the removal of the now obsolete ceiling on my friends list. And combined with the Kinect crap they're pulling, not the device itself, but the way they're pushing development and marketing right now, it's easy to feel ignored. Hell, the two things that I would actually use, Netflix and Hulu Plus, require another subscription on top of the one I'm already paying, while neither is subject to paywall access on the competition. Overall, let's be honest, another 83 cents a month on top of an already trivial monthly fee isn't much and won't break anyone's piggy bank, but in the same way, I want to know my MMO subscription is going towards developing and maintaining gameplay I have an interest in. I want to know my live fee is enhancing my gameplay on Live, not supporting some half-assed grab at another segment of the market to the utter exclusion of my own. I know there's the go PC argument here, but some games I just like playing console style when going online. Shooters, sorry to disappoint. And for other gaming, for online gaming between PSN and Live, Live is far superior in all the ways I care about. In the end, I'm not going to scream all over the internet and write hate mail to Major Nelson, poor guy. And I'll continue to pay, but I am taking notice. Maybe they'll pour some money into things I care about again and I'll be forgiven. Who knows? In any case, I've received more than one email about the rate hike from Microsoft with pointers to gold offers at a good discount, which seems like a strange mea culpa from them, so perhaps they know how people feel. Thanks for the show, Iron Past.
Yeah, man.
I can't conceive of a point that he didn't make.
Really? I know.
Like, yeah, that, he covered pretty much everything you and I talked about.
Yeah, all the details, even including like the one and only benefit we seem to be getting from the live service recently, which is hey, better codec.
Mm-hmm.
Yippee. Shit, which I'm still not entirely sure is at all related to the service, since everything is P2P anyway.
Yeah,
it's like it's not like you're hosting event server or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
just making a new codec that you didn't even have to develop available.
Yeah.
Because what they said that they realize people have more bandwidth now.
Yeah,
so
the
may
assumption
as well,
that
yeah.
in the last 5 years.
Like, oh, well, if you may as well, then all right, I guess you may as well.
I was thinking about what he mentioned about ESPN3 and Twitter, things like that. I mean, I wouldn't think your first and foremost place you do that on would be your 360. You'd be your,
it don't matter.
Your,
Well, okay, I mean, the ESPN thing, though.
Yeah.
That is, they've had a lot of success with, I mean, the Twitter thing and the Facebook integration, that shit doesn't make any sense to me. Probably because the apps themselves, as a part of Live, aren't user-friendly.
I mean, that's what I meant. I thought the first and foremost place you do it on is your PC or your phone, maybe.
But, yes, yeah. Anything where input is more functional.
But Hulu, Netflix, and the ESPN stuff,
yeah.
That's stuff, yes, you do want to
that's
do
all
on
content
TV.
Delivery, and it's actually really well done.
And for most people who want to have a quick, easy way to throw it on their TV, man, a game system that you've already got is the ideal way to do it.
Right. If you read closely to a lot of people who don't like this change, but who admit that they aren't going to run from the service, an awful lot of them say that, well, the 360 is the center of my entertainment system in my house. You know, once they get the ESPN stuff, assuming, and I mean, there's a number of people who will care about that to whatever degree. But, I mean, I need to have something to watch Netflix on, you know, and it's a stupid thing, but putting the little disc into my PS3 is irritating. Once it just becomes a launchable app on the PS3, once the Hulu Plus service moves out from beta and becomes
free
still,
to everybody.
That's supposed to be free to everybody. Right now it's locked behind PSN Plus, but only for the beta.
Only for the beta.
Like, once all that stuff opens up, I'll probably start doing all that stuff on my PS3 anyway. But they're very good at that. I mean, the Netflix integration, to whatever degree it's actually integrated, on Live Gold has been like kind of maniacally successful.
Here's what rubs me the wrong way, though, about the way the price hike strikes me. It's mentioned specifically in regards to ESPN3 and some of these other things that they've gotten exclusive rights to. And it makes me think that what you're using my money for isn't to develop the software app that goes on the 360
that's
to support
be
this stuff. Yeah, they're a software company. It's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And not that, like, I don't want to belittle like what it takes to develop the stuff, but whatever. Clearly, you know, like I said, PlayStation's not charging for theirs.
Mm-hmm.
The only impact I see the money having is Microsoft pays to have exclusive access to this content. They had an exclusive deal with Netflix to have a digital app, which is why the PS3 has a disc and is only recently getting out from that exclusivity agreement so they can have a digital app. They have exclusive access to ESPN3, which means they're paying for this, for exclusive access to this content. So am I paying Microsoft?
And the price hike means that actually we're paying for it.
Yeah. What it feels like, it may not be the reality, you know, but what it feels like is that I'm paying Microsoft to keep shit off of my PS3.
That is the net effect.
And gate access to it. It completely rubs me the wrong way. I don't have any problem paying $50 for Live. I don't have any problem paying $60 for Live. It's just the perception of how you're using my money to fuck me.
And forget the perception. The reality is you will be, speaking very generally, it depends on when you bought your cards or how many cards you bought or whatever. And $50 versus $60 is immaterial. $30 versus $40. All those prices are going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
But put all that aside. Let's just speak generally about the price hike. Right now, Live costs $50 a year. That's the suggested retail price.
Yeah.
In November, it will cost $60. And for any of us, that's $10 more for literally not one extra thing. Not one extra mm-hmm. service. Not one layer of functionality. Mm. And exactly what he points out, a double fistful of problems that Live has had since day one, that they have been made aware of since day one, at least half of which are entirely arbitrary, and they still haven't increased them.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I'm not going to watch Hulu on my consoles because I have a media PC for that. Same thing for Netflix. I have no interest in ESPN content whatsoever. And Twitter and Facebook, like you said, I'd much rather deal with on my computer. I can't think of why I would.
Particularly
do that
since
on my TV.
That's the only thing you can be doing while you're doing that on your 360.
Like, so yeah, like James said, literally none of this stuff am I personally getting any value out of.
If they absolutely demurred just a little bit and said, oh, by the way, here's your 500 friend list. We're raising the cap.
Or here's cloud storage for your
That'd be huge. But like, if they
why don't you raise it to $65 a month in that case? Sorry.
But if they gave us just the smallest sort of thing and raised the cap on the friends list, that mm-hmm. would at least be something. It's like a platform-wide benefit for all people who are now going to be subject to an increase in the price. And it's not even that. Not even that. And they've killed the original Xbox Live service, which they claimed, they always openly claimed, was one of the limiting, or the, I suppose,
it was
chief
the limiting, yeah.
limiting factor of why we can't have more than 100 friends. That's gone now. That's months gone. Where's the increase? Well, you know what? Man, none of your money is being folded back into the infrastructure of the service. None of it. It's only being folded into the purchase of
more exclusive content rights.
That's it. And that's not... It doesn't take much to see through that, particularly when I don't care about any of it. So... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he covered absolutely everything.
Yeah.
I mean, until the argument matures a little bit more and we have a little more information about it, I don't know that there's anything left to be said that he hasn't said already. It's unfortunate. The only difference between his statement and ours being like, I can just ignore that system and move to the PC. And all of the stuff that I do, hopefully in the near future, will be, I mean, the two things that I really like on the 360 as far as media will be just as easily done on the PS3. The only hang up is like,
stuff like Halo Reach.
Stuff like Reach. So, I gotta be honest and say I gotta look at my list and be like, okay, how much of this shit do I honestly care about?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it time for me to drop down to silver? I don't really want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I was always happy to have gold and arguments against it be damned, but you know, whatever.
Next letter comes from longtime listener, first time writer Matt.
We have a number of Matts.
Yeah, this is from...
it's from our Matt.
Our Matt. Well, I'm kind of bummed that I'm missing the recording, so I decided to email my thoughts about Dead Rising Case Zero.
What the hell is that?
It's like a prequel.
It's like a prequel.
To the new...
Wasn't Dead Rising a prequel? Dead Rising was a prequel.
Yeah, I know.
Well, what is this?
I don't know. Let's keep reading.
He's not going to say what it is. He's not going to give the vitals of this thing. I'm gonna watch you read those four paragraphs there or whatever, and I'm still not going to know what the hell this thing is.
Anyone who liked the first game will probably enjoy this $5 demo. Okay, you play as a you
is
play.
Is that
as,
his way of saying this is a pre-order bonus?
Maybe.
All right.
I don't know. You play as motocross superstar Chuck Green, a father who is determined to save his infected daughter, Katie, from becoming a zombie. There's an anti-zombie drug.
That's an allegory.
Yeah. There's an anti... oh, shit. There is an anti-zombie drug called Zombrex that slows down the zombification process, but the patient has to take it every 12 hours. The game starts with father and daughter leaving Vegas and arriving in Steel Creek for some gas. Chuck's truck gets stolen and the zombie killing fun begins. One of the improvements to gameplay...
Zombie steal a truck?
Yeah, I guess so.
What the hell do you need a truck for?
I don't know.
That's going to be the pre-order bonus for the next game.
Or just like, does somebody else steal his truck and he just fucking blames the zombies? Well, what the hell?
Should we call him?
Yeah. God, I wish he would do a better job of this.
Let's call him. He can be here for the recording. This will be great.
I want to be a zombie trucker.
Zombie trucker.
Matt Bulletproof. Is that his name is you found?
He's going to ruin our fun by not answering it.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message.
What a noob. He doesn't even have, like, his own...
Wait, let's... leave him a message. Oh, yeah.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, who fucking stole the guy's truck? You said that he got some gas, and then he stole his truck, and then he killed some zombies. Did the zombies steal his truck? Or did somebody else steal his truck, and he just fucking blamed the zombies? In which case... Christ, what an asshole. You need to be better about these. Like, I don't
by $5 demo, do you mean this is a pre-order bonus?
Or
do you
mean what the hell does that even mean? Like, is this like Fable Pub Tales? What the hell's even going on here? You need to revise this shit and send it back, because I don't understand. All right, I'll talk to you later.
You're welcome. All right, so on with his letter. Let's see, the truck gets stolen, zombie killing. One of the improvements to gameplay that I really liked was the workbench. You can combine special items to make crazy weapons that give you more player points and helps you level up faster.
Did
for example,
break in like
yeah, really.
5 seconds? Maybe that would have been helpful to know.
For example, take a bucket and duct tape a power drill to it to get a weapon that you put on a zombie's head. Weapons degrade just like the first game.
Well, then what about this is better? You can spend a lot of time creating an interesting weapon that still falls to shit. Yeah. And like, oh, Jesus, what a miserable pile of asshole this entire thing is turning out to be.
Weapons degrade just like the first game. Oh, well, it adds to the tension.
Oh, well, how can you oh, well, that? It doesn't add to the tension. It adds to my hypertension.
It adds to my rage.
It makes a vein on my forehead pop out.
next sentence then. There are other survivors that are optional to save, being nice and helping others to the safe
That's
house.
That's awesome, because that was one of the best parts of the first game.
Really, earns you a lot of PP and sometimes quick cash.
What?
Player points.
Right, I still don't know what player points are, but I didn't play the first one very much.
The game dropped the mechanic of walkie-talkie to let you know about survivors in favor of a guy named Bob who is on a roof and flags you down if he sees anyone wandering around the small town.
What does he mean, flags you down? I mean, does it, like, whether it's a phone or any other thing, the mechanic can still manage to interrupt me all the time. If that's how it's spelled. Right, God damn it. I had no faith in this thing whatsoever.
All in all, I enjoyed the demo. The action was fast-paced, and there's an endless supply of zombies for you to kill. There's a level cap of 5 that will transfer over to the full game when it comes out. Dead Rising K-Zero is, in my opinion, worth the $5 for anyone who liked the first game or who will get the second.
Oh, yeah, I don't know, dude. I mean, if you're saying it's a good buy for somebody who liked the first game, like... What I want to know is this going to be fun for somebody who loathed the first game?
Right.
Next letter comes from Daniel Phelps. Man, something about your podcast puts me in a philosophical mood. Or a drinking mood. Same thing in Arkansas. Anyway, I think this
what
falls...
What do you drink in Arkansas? No, you don't have to wait.
He's not going to answer.
He's
going to
hear
can
that.
Keep going.
I was thinking, but you're right. It did sound like waiting. We'll just sit here until he replies to that. Anyway, I think this falls in line with sort of questions you've been getting lately, and I've always sort of wondered this. You may have answered this in the past, but give me a break. After listening to all that stuff, I'm allowed to have a shitty memory. I played Deus Ex for the first time when I was 15 years of age. Way too young for that sort of storytelling, but... Ever since I played that game, I've looked back and realized how it completely changed how I looked at a lot of things. And I started reading all sorts of conspiracy theories and pontificating them.
Good job.
Yeah, I know. Interpreting them in my own way and looking back, the experience was one of the most surreal things. I've never been so immersed in a world in such a way that I simply could not keep from going back for more, even to the point of adding my own subplots in my mind as I play. It even brought me to a point where I considered trying to get into the industry writing plot lines, if there is such a job anymore. I did the same thing with Grand Theft Auto series, surrounding myself with mafia and gangland lore, but that was at an even earlier age. I think we all sort of go through that. I never stole a car, but I did put a potato in Pop's tailpipe once, close enough. And then came Metal Gear. Sometime
I put a banana in it, but that's because I grew up with, you know, 48 hours. Right, and I want to be like Eddie Murphy.
And then came Metal Gear sometime in between. Been with it since before the Solid branding and English translations. Imagine playing the first MGS after that. For me, it was basically explaining two games that didn't make sense for fuck all years before. And again, I disappeared down a rabbit hole, although I'm still not sure where exactly I went with it. What the fuck does Metal Gear put into your head anyway? LSD? Anyway, looking back on Metal Gear Solid, it's a miracle I didn't turn out schizophrenic. Anyway, I've heard James talks a lot about Link to the Past, the closest I can correlate my experience with, and I imagine I'll also hear a reference to a character that might have been named after the sprite file guy.brush, which I love too, bro. You'll not hear me look down on 20 clickies. But my question, Shamey's not here to hear it.
I know.
But my question, he gets a defense and he's not here to hear it. But to my question, is there any one game that you look back on that had a significant impact on you or your lives, like Deus Ex did for myself? Doesn't have to be in your teenage years or what you would call your favorite game of all time or anything. I'm just curious if you've had similar experiences with whatever game or game plot. I especially wonder what Scott has to say, because I believe it's been mentioned that he also splurges on great stories much in the same way I have. And since you don't sound like a mechanic, I figure such was not the case for Burnout, or at least I hope. I'm also curious to see what RJ says, because outside of the arcade experience, I can't imagine Marvel vs. Capcom 2 being that epic to a person. But maybe I'm wrong, that's why I'm asking. Of course, though, I want to hear what Jeremy, James, and anyone else present has to say on the matter as well. So, what say ye? Maybe I'm just impressionable, but I'd like to compare what you say with my own memory of the experience, if there even is a uniform experience like such. For me, yeah, I totally get what he's doing there. I didn't have that same exact experience, and in fact, I haven't played that same exact game. But I will when a game starts interesting me as far as the mythology of whatever they're getting into. I will research that shit, and look up that stuff and kind of just bury myself into whatever it is. The most recent thing I can think of. And now I'm trying to think of something more recent. But the most recent thing I think of is...
I don't think he's asking for recent, though. I think he's asking for formative.
Well...
I mean, unless you're still doing it.
Yeah. Well, no, and you're right. I'm not. I'm not still doing it. But I know with Tomb Raider Underworld, there was a lot of that Norse mythology.
Oh, yeah.
And so anytime something would come up, I would like... I wonder if that's a real thing, and I would look it up.
Right.
And it would be a real thing, and then that would link to other things, and I'm like, wait a second, this is the tree of... Oh, shit, I'm forgetting what it is. But anyway, tree of life, maybe, I guess, is what that is. But just all these different things, and it surprised me, I suppose, how well that was, you know, researched and used in a game, to think that I could go look that up, and it would actually be something. Mm-hmm. It would actually be something that is in the mythology, is in the lore, and that sort of stuff. But it would consume me for a while. It would consume me so much that I would not finish the part that I was at, because I'd pause the game to look up that certain situation or that certain artifact or that certain whatever situation they had put me in. Just would spend hours looking at that stuff and keep going into it, but I have never done the thing about doing the plot line, though. The subplots in my head as I play through. I haven't actually done that.
I know exactly that feeling. I'm kind of struggling to find an example, because I don't think that's especially permanent. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of thing... These are all the sorts of things that are drivers for, like, multiple playthroughs. Like, why would you keep going back to a single-player game in particular over and over and over and over again?
Mm-hmm.
when you know precisely how the story is going to unfold, when you know where all the bad guys are, where everything is. I mean, put set the gameplay aside, when the world building is so complete and perfect that you want to go back and kind of be a part of it again, when you want to sort of relax into it over and over and over again. Yeah. And I know that's always been a big deal for me. I'm trying to avoid like bringing up any of my personal like big hits before. I'm trying to look for something a little bit different that's a little more in line with what he's saying.
Uncharted's another one that does that for me, but I'll go and look up that shit while you're thinking.
I think that's a thing for you, is being able to find some reference in the real world. For me, it would be almost entirely the opposite, being something. I mean, whatever. They're obviously going to draw inspiration from the real world, but not necessarily to see it there, but to just be so enamored of the world that they've built, to be so impressed by the epic nature of that world. That was a good one, man. Like, Deus Ex was a good one to be that way. It was very deep, and there were a lot of options. You could always go back and feel like the world was alive enough that it wasn't going to prevent you from trying to see things a different way, We have brought this up before, but Resident Evil was big for us that way in the early years of Resident Evil. That world mattered so much to us that we were always trying to get to the bottom of what the hell was going on. And every game added secret on top of secret on top of secret. And there were always more questions than answers. And there was always a reason to want to go back there and try to figure out what it was.
The closest I can say that I've experienced that with you guys would be through the Assassin's Creed series.
Okay. Yeah. Somebody right now,
not necessarily through that game,
is having a formative experience with the Assassin's Creed series now.
Yeah.
And isn't that an interesting concept?
Yeah.
What's being formative for people right now? Like, who's having their fucking mind blown by games for the first time right now?
Mm-hmm.
I think for us it kind of goes way, way back. It's of a different era and kind of a different time, and it's a licensed property, and so it sort of changes things a little bit. And I suppose for people that haven't been playing games for a super long time, this may sound funny, but again, because they're licensed and movie-based and all of these other things, but how Star Wars games used to be, long before Lucas remade the original trilogy, long before we knew anything about the prequel trilogy, games were one of the most important functions of the Star Wars universe. And this is at a time when the world wasn't choked by expanded universe literature, when Lucasfilm had not sort of opened up, like really blossomed and opened up to the idea of expanded fiction. They were kind of scared of it in a lot of ways. So there weren't like a lot of books. A couple of people had been allowed to write novelized prequel type material. And like in the early 90s, there were one or two expanded universe works. But for a lot of people who are a bit younger, you just won't have a strong impression of a time when Star Wars wasn't this vast, polluted, diluted, sort of homogenized, messy, gross, is it for adults, is it for children type of thing that's defined by a bunch of shitty games and a bunch of weird fiction that can't be correlated with anything else. So if you could strip all that away and imagine a time when we all just watched the original trilogy over and over and over again on our VHS tapes and tried to get the sense of a magnificently broad and old and varied universe through three movies and a couple of books, right? And then you would look at the number of games you had, and you forget some of the like cheesier stuff, but like the entirety of the X-Wing series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, shit, dude. Like, X-Wing and TIE Fighter, and then, like, eventually, you know, not so much XVT, but X-Wing Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these were places you could go and get back into this universe that was just mind-blowing. It was like, oh my god, these guys are being allowed to, like, totally play in this universe in some other way.
Mm-hmm.
This is fucking amazing. Like, god, if they would just let more people do more shit with the Star Wars universe, it would be great. You know, and then the future happened, and that wasn't true at all. But once upon a time it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really great place to be. Kind of place you couldn't stay away from. And I really, really liked it there. Back before it was a kind of a dirty word. You know? Or a dirty phrase. I guess. Some of those things, man, I could just get into over and it just blew me away. I was like, god damn, I'm flying a TIE fighter, man. Like, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. Oh my god, I'm a Jedi. You know? I'm Kyle fucking Katarn, man. And I'm like, you know, ripping Nar Shaddaa a new asshole. Because I'm a fucking badass, you know. Like, that shit was really, really killer. And it's not possible anymore because fiction is so polluted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It meant a lot at the time, though. It meant a lot. It really did.
I wonder if I'm going to come away with that feeling with the Back to the Future series from Telltale.
Are you trying to segue there?
No, but it was something I thought about. We could use it as a segment.
They didn't get to talk about shit yet, though. So.
No, we didn't. They didn't.
I guess for me, there were several games that one just led directly to the other for me. But I started. It started with Final Fantasy Legend on the Game Boy when I was in junior high, and it was this. I mean, whatever, it was a role-playing game that wasn't very Final Fantasy-ish, because it was a different thing of theirs. It was the Saga series. But in the first one, you played these four little characters who didn't really have any character to them, and there was this tower in the center of the world. And like once you got into the tower, you went up and you found there were all these other worlds at every level of the tower. And you're trying to make it up to the top to see, like, whatever the creator of the world was or whatever was, or some paradise or something. Like, but like at every level, like everybody's like, yeah, the world's fucked up, and like, and everybody had like their own unique problems, but every world that you went to was like completely unique and had their own characters and own problems and like their own thing going on. And I was completely fascinated by that. And then the second one, also in the Game Boy, involved like your father like sneaks out of your room or sneaks out of the house and like leaves this piece of what they called Magi, which was apparently like this goddess statue that was broken up, and like there are all these pieces and the legends that bring them back together, and like the goddess will be alive again or whatever. But there's all these other like smaller gods that like some of them are like really nasty and rule over their own little parts of the world with like it's all fucked up shit. But it was sort of the same thing. Like you go up into like this weird sky place, and then you climb down a ladder and you're in this other world. And so it was like the same thing, going to like visiting all these worlds. The third one I don't remember much about, so it didn't have an impact on me. But then there was Final Fantasy Adventure, which was the first Mana game.
Oh yeah.
And so like you're going all the same thing all around the world, visiting all these people and like fixing all these problems and shit. And then it all kind of drove me to play Final Fantasy 3/6 on the SNES, which completely blew me away, because it's a SNES game compared to a Game Boy game.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot more going on story-wise, and I got completely enamored with that world and the goings-on. Then I discovered the internet and Final Fantasy VI fan fiction, and like, you know,
nice.
Consumed that at a embarrassingly rapid pace. And then by the time I was in college, like 7 came out. And that was where I guess the whole thing kind of came to a head. And it was the last like really great experience I can remember having, like going around a world and meeting all these people and doing all these things. And it was just never the same for me after that. I think something in my brain changed, or maybe the games changed, or
I contend that the like, games themselves changed.
Yeah.
I was going to say, because I think a lot of people would agree with you.
Man, I'm sorry. If Secret of Fucking Mana happened again, mm-hmm. in game form, I think I would recognize it.
Yeah.
I think if something that meaningful to this time happened, like the way that did, I still don't understand how some of the most basic gameplay mechanics from that game haven't translated very well into games now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That game was so unbelievably far ahead of its time, and it had all that wonderful like Mana series story going on with mm-hmm. just some fucking magnificent gameplay. Like, I mean, it's the whole like the inventory and the ring system and like the weapon leveling system for each of your characters and all of that stuff. It was fucking, God, it was brilliant. Damn it, I love that
one
game.
Thing that's weird though is I played the remake of Final Fantasy Adventure, which was the first uh-huh. Mana game, on Game Boy Advance. They call it Sword of Mana.
Okay.
And it was almost the same game. I mean, it had the same locations and same characters and the same story, but it did not feel epic at all in the way that the original like black and white Game Boy game felt to me. And there was something about the scale of it that just seemed smaller.
Hmm.
And I can't quite put my finger on it, but I still play the first one, and it may be partly nostalgia, but there's something else, and I'm not exactly sure what it is, that the remake just completely lacks.
I don't know. I don't have time on either one of them, so I couldn't say. But I mean, I understand what you're saying there. That, I mean, something in that could be you. I can understand why that would make mm-hmm. you suspicious that part of it's you, but I would contend
I haven't encountered it since, you know, so yeah. I would like to. I don't know how much of that is the games and how much of it is me. And it could be both.
I imagine. So. I imagine in an absolute sense that's the case. But if you're looking to parse the problem out, I think it's the games more than anything. That could just be me, you know, trying to convince myself that it's not my own old age and experience that's making me feel that way. So how in the world is a fighting game? A piece of epic world building or whatever for you?
Well, there were two titles I was thinking of while having the conversation. I was thinking of the last game I was enamored with, story-wise, was Eternal Champions on the
Genesis.
Sega Genesis. I think it was it's the only fighting game I've ever played where I was significantly interested in every character's story and how they turned out.
Okay.
Because each and every one of them had a valid reason for, you know, coming back. If anyone's not familiar with the storyline, it's basically a group of people who had significant impact on their timeline, and they were killed before they could do what they were supposed to do to ensure a better future for the Earth. And the Eternal Champion hosts this tournament where he can only provide the winner to go back in time before they got killed, to make the change and ensure that they go forward and do what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And looking at that world and looking at all the characters there, I wanted to play that game over and over and over again, see everybody's ending, see how they use their second chance at life. The second game that was the impact for me was NFL 2K on the Dreamcast. First sports title I could play online with other people.
Right.
Because playing the computer enough, you start to learn all the little tricks and nuances and how to beat any team at any given time. Now, when you play it online, you got actual person on the other end who's got his own tricks and nuances that he can use against you. And you got to force yourself to think of new ways and strategies that you never thought of before. So, not to the level of impact that Deus Ex had with Letters Writer, but I think those are the biggest impacts those two games have on me.
Yeah, I was trying to look that up because I had one of the 2K games. But the only reason I bought it was because it was... I think the only reason I bought it actually was because it was something you could use with Xbox Live. Mm. And it says here that it was in NFL 2K2, but God, I don't remember it being 2K2. But I guess it would have had to have been, because that's 2001. That's when Live was out at that point. So anyway, The other one I forgot, though, and I was looking it up there, Mist would be mine.
Oh, yeah. That is yours.
That is yours. That is absolutely yours.
So, got the music, got the novels, you know. Not just as a fan, but as a... I loved it. I loved that world.
That's actually a very good example.
Mm-hmm. Still love that world.
Yeah, you never fell out of love with it, but it just kind of fell by the wayside.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a terrific example.
All right.
Last email comes from Kyle B., who says, so often here, Peter Molyneux brought up in game discussions, particularly in the context of the ever-popular Are Video Games Art debate, but I've seldom heard anything just about the man, what he does, and his particular brand of genius insanity when it comes to creating and marketing his games. So, Peter Molyneux, discuss.
When did we just discuss Peter Molyneux?
It's been pretty recently, hasn't it?
Yeah, it was
like a couple of weeks ago or something.
Maybe it was just on the last episode we just posted.
Could have been.
Well, all right. Here's how the thing works with Peter Molyneux, is that the motherfucker only ever comes up when he decides to. I don't know what the hell happens to him. He gets a fucking bug up his ass and like gets excited about something.
I need to tell people this.
I got something to say, guys.
He's the biggest fan of his work, and not in an arrogant way at all.
No, he's like Willy Wonka.
Yeah, yeah.
That is great.
That's what he is. Like,
but he's absolutely fascinated.
The problem is he doesn't have his own chocolate factory.
Yeah, yeah, really.
He's absolutely fascinated with ideas.
Yeah. He's a guy we need more of, but he's absolutely a guy who's underutilized. And I don't mean we need necessarily more guys like him. We need more of his work actually happening in the real world. He needs to... It's like, you know... I don't know. Like... Willy Wonka, you know, and Nestle's chocolate factory would just be kind of stupid. And that's kind of how I feel about him. It's like, he's got all of that sort of, I don't know, like, some weird kind of, like, Lewis Carroll type nonsense drifting around up in his head, and I think it all gets just... comes out wrong. Like, there's just some very strange, inherently British peculiarities that are in him, and he's the right kind of creative, because he's a kind of creative that doesn't really spend a lot of time being talked about or being, I don't know, paid for or something in the industry. I mean, kind of torn between like Western and Eastern sensibilities right now, but and I know that like the European preconceptions are always lumped in with the Western ideal, but I mean let's use him as a catalyst for discussing or for separating out of solution like the real differences, like the subset of Western thought. Because, you know, there's Eastern Western and American Western. There's the Europa, there's the Americana.
Right, right.
And those are actually very different. And we kind of forget a lot of times because he's, you know, he works so diligently on, you know, the most American of consoles. But that's not where his head, that's not the headspace he's in, you know? You know, we need the fucking Europeans, like, the Europeans need a console in the game. Mm. Got an American console. We've got a thoroughly Japanese console. Not the way. You know what I'm saying? But like, we need for like the third market, the third region. I mean, I don't mean to stratify it that way, but like. Those guys, man. Those guys. I don't know who the hell's gonna do it, but like.
The PC has mostly been their stomping grounds.
That's the thing;
it
still is, man. Yeah. If anybody in the world is keeping the PC alive, it's Europe in general. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I find him very, very much of that
type of thing, and I don't think it works well in our environment. I think there's this need to sort of Americanize a lot of what kind of comes out of his head. When to an American, at least to this American, it feels awfully.
You know, it strikes me that the Japanese want very much to not have such Japanese games anymore.
Yeah.
But the problem isn't that their games are all weird in Japanese. The problem is that they lack big ideas. So maybe they need to bring a big idea guy like Peter Molyneux over to work with them, and then they can slather their Japanese all over top of it, and it'd be
something
weird and kind of cool.
Christ, would it be strange?
Remember when Japanese games were weird and kind of cool?
Yeah, I know. their problem isn't the fact that they don't know how to look for new ideas. That isn't actually their cultural issue. The cultural issue is that they're perfectly aware of the need to follow the West's lead, but they don't know how to listen to the advice they solicit. Their corporate structure and to some degree their general social structure is sort of immune to this sort of thing. They're still fascinated with all the sorts of things that make, you know, it's like, tell us how to fucking do what you do. Okay, do all those things. Here's a list of things. You need to do these things. Oh, well, we don't do those things. But tell us how to do what you do. I mean, it's obviously an oversimplification, but cultural differences are extraordinary. So, I don't know. Yeah, Molyneux, man. I want somebody to fucking take his leash off of him. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I've decided that's my idea of the problem with him. Isn't that he's just allowed to make weird shit. It's that he's not given enough resources to truly, get thoroughly funky with what he wants to do.
I think Milo would be a lot more interesting if it was called Molyneux. They put him in there and you just sit there and talk to him. What do you think of this? And you hold something up and he's just, yeah.
So it could be kind of like Max Headroom?
Yeah. Bingo.
Welcome to the Cafe 80s.
We got to talk about that because people are thinking people. What?
Peter Headroom.
Yeah, right.
People on the thread for that Back to the Future thing. You're like, they're going to talk about this.
Yeah, yeah. That was good. I kept getting so disappointed by that story though because all the stories were like, there's images of the game, you know, or whatever, images from the Back to the Future thing, and I would click on it and see that one picture, that one piece of it, and I start looking around through all the links for the images, and I'm like, what the F, man? And then I'd go to, the source article, and I'm like, well, this isn't it. And then I'd go, to Cog, and then over to Kotaku, and I'm like, so this is it.
Yeah.
This one piece of concept art, this is it. Not that this is bad, I just, okay, this one piece of stuff.
I just like the information. The information was good enough for me, but, you know, Christopher Lloyd providing the voice, that's great. That will be my connection. I don't have to have both of them doing it.
Well, you just say that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm just...
I didn't need both of them in the cartoon, but that worked for me.
Yeah, whatever. How old were you?
I don't know, but not very still old. Worked.
Nah, because you were like a little fucking baby. Like, that was a cartoon. That was back. That was this other thing. Like, this is now. And your critical senses are, you know, they're different, is all I'm saying. Like, you're going to be more aware of the idea.
Yeah.
Also, you don't know what the hell Marty's going to sound like.
And I don't know what he's going to sound like. Yeah, they could totally fuck
that. Like, are they just going to, do, original? Or are they going to, do homage? Or are they going to, try as hard as they can?
It's going to be Nolan North.
Yeah, right?
I ain't got nothing to worry about then, do I?
I'd say you have plenty to worry about. Mostly the fact that you don't worry about it. Yeah. I mean, it looks great. I like the art design. I mean,
but the Bob Gale thing actually surprised me. I didn't know that they were going to be doing that, using him.
I didn't read that.
Yeah, he's working with Telltale to do the stories.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's cool. Yeah, so the original guy that was designed.
Yeah.
Because that turned out really well for Ghostbusters.
Damn it.
Well, and my point being, that was a movie. This is a game.
Yeah.
They're different.
They are.
Like.
That's true. Yeah. Fuck.
I'm
still hopeful.
I wasn't even trying to do that. Like, I totally.
You can't pop that bubble, goddammit.
It doesn't matter that you weren't trying to do it. Yeah. You're kind of like Scott Summers, man. That shit just pours out of your eyeballs. Yeah. Unless you like want to put some ruby shades on it. And keep dashing his hopes against the right. rocks.
Oh well, you know, it'll be my.
Hey, there's no way you can do this. There's no way you can do this. It cannot be made. It can't. It cannot be done well. I'm sorry. I'm afraid that it's not possible. Okay, look.
That's fine.
It's going to be. Here's the way I feel about it. Right. It's either going to be. A ceaseless, like unending reference to the source material, mm-hmm. which, you know, everybody knows, like Terrence and Philip with fart jokes, we can go on and fucking on with Back to the Future quotes. Mm-hmm. It's gone for fucking days. Like, we love it. It's so easily, so humorous, and like everything about the movie comes across when you're just sort of quoting it to each other. And it can fit in so many different circumstances. Brilliant. And like, if that's what the game becomes, it'll be tiresome very quickly. If the game tries to avoid that at all costs, then it'll feel like, it could end up feeling like a piece of foreign matter, you know? Like, well, this isn't really Back to the Future, is it? You know, like, I mean, I see a DeLorean there, and like, you know, I hear Doc Brown, but like, is it going to be telling the same jokes again, which, in my opinion, is exactly what happened with Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, dude, like, I love your movie. I do. But you're just telling me the same jokes again. And it's not funny. It's very stale. And there's it's very hard to pull off, like, homage or reference and still feel kind of crisp and snappy. It just seems risky as hell to me, you know? Like, and so much of it was just, like, the natural kind of, like, Zemeckis weirdness that just was in the whole thing and the delivery of all of those things. And so much of it was in... How are you ever going to infuse the game with what really made the movies lovable? The movies were not, like, a brilliant piece of mind-twisting, yeah. like, stuff. It was kind of fun. But, dude... Marty turned invisible while he's playing the guitar. That's not good sci-fi. You know what I mean? It doesn't. It's stupid. But you know, like, good night, future boy. Like, the look on his fucking face when like the little car drives off the table and runs into the thing and catches on. Yeah, like that's brilliant. We all know it is because it was part of what the thing is, and I don't see a way to put that in a game. I think there's a misunderstanding that any of what made it good can actually appear in a game. You know?
I hold out hope.
I'm just trying to examine it. Like, all I have is an idea, you know. And you know, I don't know. Like, I mean, how many times am I going to be called a butthead in this game? I mean, shit like that. Like, what can I expect? I can either expect, like, a slavish devotion to old jokes that are still funny in the context of their original telling.
But it'll only work for the one episode that you play.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not for the full five.
It's tricky. And it seems like, I don't want to say that they're taking this lightly, but it's like, hey, whatever, we'll just do this. You know, it's a little project. You people call my people, and you know, we'll Christopher Lloyd the motherfucker up, and it'll be great.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. You know, I'm very, very skeptical. So. And like, whatever. And then like, there's Jurassic Park, which has never been anything but stupid. So, that's how you could possibly fuck that up. You know what it needs to be, kind of, in a way, is it needs to be like the desktop adventures. And fucking Matt's not here, or he'd be oh yeah-ing his way through this discussion. But you guys ever play that shit, the Yoda stories, mm-hmm. or the Indiana Jones like little desktop adventure things? Man, you need to internet that shit up and look at it. That shit was fucking brilliant. It was like these stupid, cheesy little. What would have been at the, like if they existed now, they'd be like some kind of Facebook game or some kind of like browser app game. But they were just like these little desktop adventures, and they did Indie and they did Yoda Stories, and they were fun and they were cute little homages to the, just cheesy little adventure games, and they were enough of sort of a contact point with the original thing that you kind of got all the. What made it sort of fun, but you know they weren't a total retelling because they were just cheesy and stupid. They were also safe, you know. They weren't violating canon at any level whatsoever. See, he's like a cute little dude, and like you would click on things and go places, and it was insane. Everybody had big heads.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
Yeah, it was just cute, weird stuff, man. But it was really, really fun and great. Like something like that, you know, like. Flux capacitor adventures or some shit like that. But yeah, I mean, you never know. I could be wrong. Cartoon was actually kind of fun, as I remember.
Yeah, it was.
But like, you know, the cartoon was also like had just fucking kids in it, and like I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it was that. Well, it was like because they were there, but like they showed up for like the last like 90 seconds of the last movie.
Yeah,
and then they're like all over the cartoon, and it's like, well, this isn't.
They were the main focus of the cartoon.
This isn't exactly what I wanted, but I can understand that it's the best way to do it.
Yeah.
So, I know, and I've read a lot of people's concerns that, you know, Back to the Future is about time travel. And the movie was all about like funny jokes, really, and clever writing and interesting scenarios, none of which are relevant anymore, by the way.
No.
Whatever. But. As a game mechanic, like you got to be like traveling around in time. So how much, you know, how much fun are you going to be able to have with that?
I don't know. Yeah, it's.
Am I going to be able to punch in any number I want? Absolutely not.
No.
No.
Yeah, it hasn't worked out. And I've owned both games. The God, what the fuck was the name of that company? Wasn't a claim.
What are you talking about?
That made the
LJN.
LJN. The NES, the NES, Back to the Future, and then the Back to the Future 2 and 3 for Nintendo. But yeah, just J. What was it? JLN?
LJN.
LJN, yeah. Yeah, that's who it was. No, those were fucking horrible. Those were pitiful. But I played part 2 and 3. The only reason I played it because they did give me a DeLorean and all I could ever do was, you know, have the remote control that would summon the DeLorean. It would fly down. You'd jump in it, select one of the three time periods. Well, two time periods you want to go to,
right?
And then it would drop you off. That was it.
Really?
And as soon as it would drop me off, I'd call it back.
You didn't ever have to like put banana peels and some old beer in it.
Yeah, you did have to collect fuel for it. You did have to collect fuel. It wasn't banana peels and old beer, but there were like little fuel cells that you had to collect.
Oh, fuel cells aren't fun.
Yeah.
Well, unless you like
that actually game had to go, wasn't fun.
Unless you actually had to go down to the corner store.
No, you just.
Or the convenience store, wherever the hell it is, you're supposed to be able to get plutonium in 1985.
Yeah. And the hoverboard part was fun, but whatever. Yeah, it was bad. I don't know. I guess maybe. Yeah, you're right. Fucking Ghostbusters. Jesus Christ. Forgot about that.
And I still don't listen to me. That. Don't listen to me. It'll be fantastic
success. I'm not listening to you so far.
Yeah, you are.
No, I hope people write in and be like, don't let him do it, Scott. Don't let him do it. On to the tweets from Spigot. He writes in and asks if any of us played Mafia 2 yet. I love the original. So far, the sequel is living up to the first, and I'm happy. I haven't played it.
I heard people say that it felt awfully confined and short.
Yeah, for an open-world game, it felt...
It was like heavily, heavily edited.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's what I heard.
That you were just getting the bum's rush through the entire story. I mean, it sounds like he hasn't finished it yet, so maybe that... Maybe it's not to a place where that feels like it's happened, but that's kind of what I picked up.
Yeah.
I guess I need to ask Kevin. Kevin was going to act like he was all about it.
Well, we should.
You haven't said it.
Spigot also writes in, I posted a picture of my new egg box that got delivered, and Spigot says, ooh, I just realized what is beginning, and I'm happy for you, Scott. Count Elmdor says, live cast the build.
Have you guys worked out the thing with the processors yet?
That's all I'm waiting on, is the processor.
Just for the thing to clear for them to buy?
No, that cleared...
So he's going to buy it and ship it?
Yeah, he was supposed to buy it. Here's the story, I'll tell you the story. Monday, I believe it was Monday, we finally, he and I were playing fucking phone tag all weekend long trying to get in touch with him. And Monday, we finally just started having a long text conversation with each other while I was at work. And he's like, okay, tonight I'll go home and I'll find out what my PayPal account is, because he didn't know. And I'll give it to you. So that got straightened away. Turns out PayPal holds money for 3 days until it goes into the person's account that you send it to.
Okay.
It is an instantaneous. It holds it for 3 days. So Friday he gets the money. And then we hear about this price drop on...
I don't even know where the hell that came from.
Some i7, some of the Intel processors. Price drop on Monday, this past
Which
Monday.
Price drop was it supposed to be?
Supposed to be... It was going to be the
No. Whose price drop?
Intel. They were cutting the price.
Yeah, I don't...
What are you talking about?
Where did they cut the price at? Because... Price still the same as far as I could tell.
Yeah, I noticed that
today.
Too.
Where did you hear this?
From Kevin.
Did you corroborate this at all? Yeah, it's the internet.
And then he sent me the link.
What link?
I don't remember. It was a link.
Oh, Jesus,
whatever.
Christ. No, you can't do that. You can't just make assumptions about prices. Price drops like this are always rumored.
Well, I said, let's wait until Monday, see what happens.
Right.
Because if it goes down, then maybe the i60 will go down, or, you know, whatever. It might change things. Who knows? Let's just see.
What are you looking to get now? The 860?
The 860, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. It's fine.
Anyway, Monday comes. I'm like, dude, just go ahead and get the 860.
Yeah.
I mean, I say, go ahead and pick it up. Wednesday, he says, okay, I got one on hold from you at Micro Center. I'm going to go pick it up. Thursday, today, he sends me a text, and he's like, I worked late. I couldn't go by there and get it. So, and I said, "What are the options of me getting this thing by Saturday? Because it's like it's the last thing I need." And he said he was going to send me a text tonight to let me know how much more shipping, like 2 day Saturday delivery shipping, would cost, that sort of thing. So, and I haven't heard from him yet.
Okay. We're not holding up this weekend.
That's the last thing I'm waiting on. I'm so tempted to just
to do what? There's nothing for you to do.
There really isn't now. At this point, no. I did look at Micro Centers, the two Micro Centers we were looking at, to see if it was there to say, like, I'm just going to drive up there, pick it up.
Jesus Christ, don't do that. Don't do that. You've already worked it out with him. Get it taken care of. You'll be fine.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a long weekend. I don't want to play.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You'll be okay. You'll be okay. I mean, I know it does suck to have to wait for, like, the last thing. Don't get me wrong. Absolutely no.
Iron Pass says, this is gonna be streamed or recorded or something, right? Actually, I could use that when I make mine in the future.
Yeah, we could do something.
Yeah. Doogie2K says, Godspeed, man. Nothing better than building your own. C4Cat says, good luck, Scott. Good luck with hearing click rather than crack. So, yeah. Those were all the PC build tweets that we got. Doogie2K says, in other news, what's this I hear about Gearbox and Duke Nukem Forever? Makes sense in a way. Pitchford was on the DN3D team. Still, didn't that ship sail about 12 years ago? I mean, Jesus, Duke Nukem Forever has been more myth than game since I was in about grade 10.
Well, as I understand it, I mean, it depends on who you want to listen to or how much of what they say you want to believe. But it's not like the game is... The game is functionally vaporware. It's not like there is no code anywhere. It's not like the thing was never compiled to a playable state. Mm-hmm. If what we've been told by several different sources is to be believed, that the thing was basically already a game and had been for a very long time. Mm-hmm. It just couldn't be brought together for reasons that I actually don't honestly understand.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they haven't... I think it stands to reason that if this was just pure speculation, just absolutely baseless speculation, that somebody would have come out and said, no, this is total bullshit, this is not happening. And they haven't. they haven't exactly come out and confirmed it either, but, you know. I mean, unfortunately, like, Pitchford's a bit of a clown. Like, he's a great guy, but he's like, he can't ever be precisely sure, like, what's going on with him. So, it seems reasonable, though.
One of the former 3D Realms guys apparently today tweeted a picture of some pigs flying with Duke glasses on them, which is apparently a reference to him having said in the past that Duke would jokingly that Duke would probably be released when pigs fly. So, if it's not a real thing, then you know they're not doing anything to dissuade people from believing it. They're actually encouraging it. So.
Signs point to yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to act like
who doesn't want to see what that thing was all about at this point.
I know a lot of people want it to die, but like it.
Say, if you can give it to somebody that actually knows how to polish a thing up and just put it out.
Yeah.
Then why not? Why just let it sit and rot until it's, you know, no longer relevant at all? I mean, you could argue the property's no longer relevant, but the code. I mean, we've seen stuff as recently as like a year or two ago, and like it looked like a modern shooter, you know. So this isn't some like ancient shit they're sitting on. It's at least
somewhat contemporary.
Yeah. So like, yeah. I mean, I'd rather for there to be one more thing for me to look at than one less thing.
Yeah.
And as long as this thing's been hanging over everybody's heads, I'm morbidly curious to see what it's all about, and maybe we'll get a good game out of it. If not, whatever, we haven't lost anything. So yeah, I'd rather it come out than not.
Let me submit this idea for consideration. A lot of people thought with the final closure of everybody who was at all responsible for that game and its delay and its complete fucking failure, that it was dead and done with and you know, forever buried in the earth with a stake through its heart. Which actually isn't true at all. Things that are never finished are not really dead. They're always kind of out there in an undead state. So the notion that this thing is being somehow resurrected to be finished and released to market makes them feel like somebody's beating a dead horse. Like they won't just let it die. My feeling is a little bit different. Imagine just. It's total conjecture, but I mean, imagine how we would have felt if Daikatana had never actually made it to market.
Mm-hmm.
If things got so fouled up that the company just choked on its own self, and the game in this 95% finished state never actually came out. Mm-hmm. It would always just sort of, I mean, it eventually would have reverted to control, to someone else's control somewhere and someone else's ownership. And it would just sort of be sitting out there, dead and undone, but not gone, not transmuted and from one form into another, never understood for whatever it was. It came out and was mediocre as hell. Like, I mean, it actually wasn't the biggest turd in the fucking world. It was just like mediocre as hell, with a lot of bad stuff in it. But there it was, and then we were able to digest it. Then we were able to see it and get our hands and our eyes on it and be like, this is what it is. And it is crap and it wasn't worth the wait. And it's poorly managed and badly made. But there it is. It's done. Now it's dead.
Right.
Now it is truly dead because we know its name. We can compartmentalize it and put it where it needs to be. In our own conscience and kind of like in the zeitgeist. But psychologically, when it's still out there, unknown and untouchable.
Yeah,
and
I still feel that way about the Babylon 5 game. You know,
yeah,
it still comes up in conversations. Yeah. You know, that you and I have all the time. Like, yeah, fucking Babylon 5 game, man. And it's always going to be there, hanging around. Like, man, if only I could have played that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to. You know, I don't want to have more games to feel that way about.
Yeah,
and you're right. The only way a game like that actually dies is once you've actually had a chance to see it and digest it
and form
an opinion on it. Yeah, and either say yeah it's good or yeah it's bad.
Yeah, because otherwise it'll keep popping up like a fucking specter.
Yeah,
you know, like the goddamn bogeyman. Every couple of years, it'll drift to the top of some rumor pile. But if they actually bring it to market, however the hell they're going to manage it, full retail price, $40 through Steam, I mean, fuck fine.
That'll be full retail price.
Who the hell knows?
Very little doubt of that.
But I think the best possible scenario is to get it to market no matter what. Mm-hmm. No matter how shitty, no matter how awful, no matter whatever. I mean, I'm sure they want to put a bit of a shine on it since they're going to mm-hmm. put their name on it. But I think for those of us that are interested, genuinely or morbidly, and for those of us that actually want to see it dead, mm-hmm. the best possible scenario for all of us is that it actually come out.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, and it's just conjecture, but having seen how art comes to be, like what probably needed to happen was it needed to get out of the hands of people that cared too much about it and put in the hands of people that could make hard decisions, that this doesn't work, it needs to be cut, it needs to go away so that it can actually be finished
mm-hmm.
and put out.
Yeah, it's a dirty business, man. Art's a filthy fucking business. Yeah.
Because you have to know when to walk away from the thing. It's never done. There's always more to do.
You got to care a lot in order to make it happen. And caring too much keeps it from being good. Mm-hmm. Can keep it from being good.
Next tweet comes from, excuse me, Croso, who says, Mass Effect and Fallout saves are bigger than 100K. But saving to the cloud is a great idea, almost worth a gold price hike.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Iron Pass says, Lara Croft, Shank, Comic Jumper, what the hell is with 2 GB arcade games now? Those old 250 hard disk drives need to go on sale quick. Spigot adds to that, my poor 20 gig can't handle it.
No. Because your poor 20 gig isn't 20 gig.
Yeah, it's what?
Yeah, it's like 13 or something.
Yeah, something. 13 something, change. 14 maybe.
Yeah. Lava says, plus one to RJ playing Mass Effect 2. Would be quite interesting to hear his progress through it.
Yeah, dude, I can't wait. I can't wait for you to be like, what the fuck is all this business? What's wrong with this person?
I miss a lot of stuff to go back on that one. Yeah, but I'll give it a shot.
And finally, Kyrie would like to know, where did Gibbs go? I want to Gib people and or corpses.
I don't know, but they were one of the most satisfying,
no shit,
steadfast
man.
Aspects of gaming for a long time. And nobody could argue that they were genuinely, like, you know, disturbing. It was just preposterous, man. Like, I shot the dude and he turned into meat wad. You know? that's not even like gross because it's ridiculous, you know? I mean, yeah, it was. I mean, I really remember wondering that a long time ago.
Yeah.
Like, and I think it's when we moved from like one phase of technology to another,
mm-hmm.
the way that character models were designed.
Yeah.
That turning them into, you know, little giblets was not practical from the standpoint of like rendering a character model. They all just turned into like, you know, rubber rag dolls.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, you know, I miss like.
I didn't realize how much I missed Gibbs until you just mentioned it though.
Oh God,
but
yeah.
But God, man, I remember Quake 1, when I was learning to use mouse and keyboard, running around with the fucking, what was it, the grenade launcher.
Yeah.
Shooting that shit under the feet of some little walking, what the fuck were those things? I don't know. Had the long fingers and shit.
Yeah.
And white with blood all over them. And then, and it just flies everywhere. God damn it, that was really great. That was satisfying as fuck.
You hit somebody with a crowbar in Half-Life, the...
Yes.
And then like,
yes. Oh my god.
And then like all that shit's just like out across the floor. And there's like somewhere in that pile, there's always like the skull with the one eyeball in it.
Oh.
That was always great, man. I loved that shit. Yeah, it kind of. I mean, you know, I get it. I know that. I don't want to see that happen in the real world.
Hell no.
I have no interest in that shit at all. But
no.
It was just sort of satisfyingly, like, it was a real gut punch, you know? Like, Like, and it never, like, it never didn't elicit laughter. Like, you just got fucked up. Like, you just got extremely fucked up. And, like, one of the most impressive ones I ever saw was when we were playing Return to Castle Wolfenstein multiplayer.
Yeah.
That weird sort of, like, modern World War II hybrid Normandy Beach kind of crap.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of in the earlier days of objective-based multiplayer stuff. And one of the attacks you could get, I suppose, after you... I can't even remember how it went, but you could kind of have, like, something do, like, a bombing run.
Mm.
You know, like a napalm bombing run, like, right along the beach. And I remember, like... We were assaulting. We were on the assault side playing multiplayer during this one situation. And, like, I remember... it was the stupidest thing in the world. But I remember, like, trying to cover the distance between the seawall and the fortress, you know, while the guys were on, like, you know, the light machine guns, like, fucking shooting people up and everything. And... I was just like running and sprinting and like running as fast as I could and trying to make sure I didn't get shot. Explosions going off all around me. And I turn and I look back and a bunch of people were running behind me. And like one of those fucking napalm airstrikes came in and just fucking obliterated that entire place. It was just like boom, 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 boom. Like, and it was like catching up to me. And I was like running and diving through a door.
Uh-huh.
And I turned around just in time to see like one of my buddies who was like maybe 10 paces behind me like get hit and like... The bomb hit, like, right behind him.
Uh-huh.
And, like, just erupted and then sort of billowed out and consumed him. And as it did, watching in extraordinary detail, his character model just disassemble itself. And, like, just fly off into pieces, you know? And, like, watching... I mean, obviously the transition was pretty primitive considering when the game came out, but the memory is of like watching the skin peel away from his face and nothing but like bloody bones come flying through the air and chunks of muscle bouncing off the wall.
This is the sort of shit that's really hard to explain to people who don't play games why it's funny. Because they think if you enjoy like it happening in a game, they think you've got some weird sick thing in your head.
If you want to fuck with these people, sit around and talk about murdering motherfuckers for hours on end. They get really uncomfortable with that. They don't like it at all. Like, I just remember it so distinctly. And nowadays, it's like, you get hit by a bomb, you just sort of, like, get blown around and, like, your dead body lands somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny, but the impact is not the same. Mm-hmm. Like, you just get fucking stomped.
I remember playing multiplayer and when you would get gibbed. And, like, you see, like, some of the gibs and little tracers, like, flying out from your screen. You hear the squishy sound, and you're just like, oh. Man, I got fucked up.
Yeah. It's totally
different. The worst, though, was getting telefragged.
Oh, God.
Walking into the teleporter and somebody coming through at the same second you walk in and then... Like, God damn it, man.
It was a thing.
It was so much worse than just getting shot and dying.
Yeah.
Just getting gibbed. I don't know why. It was still death, but...
That
was great.
No, it was more than that. I think Soldier of Fortune at first was a little bit disturbing. You know,
with
their whole like
the ragdoll stuff.
Well, and with like the way that because it wasn't just like gibbing the body, it was like you could blow different parts off. You know,
that thing. Yeah, I remember that.
I was like, oh, that's weird. Ugh.
Yeah,
that's a little bit strange. That's not as funny. That was even more punchy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, just good old-fashioned, you know, meat wads flying around the room. Or just chunks of guy. Like, that's fucking hilarious. Although, I don't know. Maybe when you're in the middle of two insurgent wars that are defined by people being blown to pieces by bombs, it's...
It's funny, because you know, the first time I saw ragdoll physics, I want to say it was in a Soldier of Fortune game.
That may have been...
I remember that's where I sort of took notice of it. Like, it got to be... It was fun. It was funny, and, like, we had a good time with it. But now, I've seen it so much, and none of the other stuff that... Yeah, I'd like to see some of that old stuff come back, the gibbing and the...
Yeah, it was... I enjoyed it.
Bullet wounds, yeah, it was good stuff. Is this what we do now? We sit around and talk about the good old days and...
To some degree, it's what
how much better things were when we were younger.
Just during the summer.
We need some games to come out again.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll play some Metroid. Although... My suspicion is that's just going to
be
going to
talk about how like how things were better when we were young. Oh, jeez.
Okay, got a voicemail and then Kevin's corner to go to. Here's our first voicemail.
Hey, IGC, what's going on? This is your loyal listener, Count Elnor in Portland, Oregon. And I was listening to the latest episode, the Death and Resurrection episode. And what occurred to me was another interesting thought. To go around the table with, and that is, if you could swap two developers and their franchises with another developer and franchise, what would you do? Now, the thing that occurred to me is the two upcoming games in the Warhammer 40K series. There's the Dark Millennium Online MMO, which is currently being made by Vigil, the Darksiders guys,
and Space Marine.
Then there is the Space Marine action game, which is being made by Relic, who already make a bunch of Warhammer 40K strategy games. That just seems backwards to me, so what I would do is I would propose to swap those, have the Darksiders people make the Space Marine game, and have Relic make the MMO. What do you guys think? Oh, and tell Kevin sorry to intrude on his corner, but...
That's actually perfect. That thought hadn't occurred to me.
To switch those two?
To switch those two, and how actually that would be a much more natural fit. Not to mention the fact that I think making an RTS is a really good way to... I think you can learn a lot because of class mechanics and unit mechanics about what you need to do to make an MMO. So having like a background in... strategy, multiplayer-based strategy, moving to an MMO, that would make a hell of a lot more sense. That's a good thought, actually. It's kind of sad that didn't occur to me. Or that I haven't heard it brought up before. That's precisely as it should be. Okay, let's see. Developers and their properties.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only tough because, like, you know that there are some perfect answers out there.
Yeah.
Like that one?
yeah. At least as good as that one.
Well, he's already like one or two upped anything we're going to come up with here. So.
Well, because it's fucking like timely as hell.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
But you know, I don't think you're working hard enough.
I know Cryptic's working on that Neverwinter game, and that's not a good fit. So maybe you can take that and go somewhere with it.
I don't think Cryptic should be able to work on it.
That's the problem, right?
I can't think of anything I'd want to give them.
They can have my world. How about that?
I need a drink for this one. This one's like seriously ponderous because I feel like there's got to be an absolutely perfect answer.
Congratulations, you stumped the band.
No, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to cut out all the stuff that makes it look like we can't come up with the right answer.
You just beat in-game chat.
Right. I need someone to make a note somewhere. Or send yourself an email. Get the answer to this needs to be the first thing on the next show. Because I can tell by the look on Scott's face that he's not coming up with it.
Right. Gotcha. When is the next show? The 16th? No. Yes.
Yes.
The 16th.
After Reach. You're making me sad. You need to go to the next voicemail.
Okay. We'll get back to that next one. Well, it's Kevin's corner.
Yeah.
time for Kevin's Corner. So here we go. It's Kevin.
Hey, guys. What is up? If you haven't noticed, I'm trying to see if I could get the Google Reader to interpret me correctly. Now, I know I'm going to say some words that I probably ain't going to fucking be able to pick up. But anyway, fuck talking like that. Look, hey, guys, what do you guys think about the Fable 3 environment, man? You guys talk about Fable 3. What about New Vegas, man? I mean, are you guys jazzed up about that shit like I am? Are you getting it on PC? You getting it through Steam? You know, you getting it on your 360? What's the fucking word? And, geez, there was some other shit that was coming out. I forgot about it. Yeah, and I'm sorry I didn't call you guys last. We got a lot of shit going on. But anyway, yeah, touch on that shit, and I'm still listening to the Motion Strollers. I think that's what it is. You guys come up with some stupid shit.
You!
Anyway, I'll talk to you later. Have a great fucking show. Later.
I'm pretty sure he didn't ever actually mention broccoli.
No, he didn't.
But there it is.
So here's how it translated. He was trying to go very slow and you know,
and enunciate
and everything else. Yeah. Here's how it translated that. Hey guys, what is? If you have been noticed, I'm trying to see if I could get the go read. It hurts. It is in time written the car broccoli.
Yeah. That's good shit. That cool. That was actually far worse.
Oh wait, here. Wires goddamn anal talk.
That's great. Good job, my friend. Good job.
All right. And here's another call from Kevin.
Hi, GC, what's up? Okay, looks like I ruffled some feathers around there. I got Paul, what the hell, I'm thinking about Paul. Anyway, Scott's been bugging me this whole weekend to take care of his situation there. Yeah, so I live in a city with Micro Center in it, you know, boo-hoo on you guys. But anyway, hook me up, man, and I'll set you straight and send your stuff over to you. And if you didn't buy that TV, don't buy that damn TV. Talk to you fellers later.
Half the fun is fucking Google Translation. So there you go, Kevin's Corner. So yeah, you know the process. I sent him a text already, and he hasn't replied yet, so I have no idea what's going on.
We are skipping like two things, I think.
I can think of one of them.
I don't want to talk about them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just can't do it.
How long have we been going now?
Three.
All right, well, let's call it.
I still feel like I should know the answer to that question.
He doesn't want to give up. He really doesn't. He feels like he would be defeated if we quit before.
You are defeated. He won.
I don't think that was the idea.
A winner is him.
Yeah. An achievement unlocked.
I'm going to think about it on the way.
50 gamer points.
I'm going to come up with the answer on the way home.
Hey, Remedy still owns the rights to Death Rally. That's right up Rockstar.
Yeah, man. That's great.